all?
Yes, I've heard. Killed men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Right? Against that? No! We will run! And we will live.
Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your bed, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The Ministry of Peace concerns itself with war. The Ministry of Truth with lies. The Ministry of Love with torture. And the Ministry of Plenty with starvation. These contradictions are not accidental, nor do they result from ordinary hypocrisy. They are the deliberate exercises in doublethink. Just Orwellian fiction, right? It could never happen in America. Decide for yourself. The Patriot Act concerns itself with the most unpatriotic of acts, allowing searches and seizures without judicial warrant. Many modern legislative enterprises engage in doublespeak. Often, in fact, the more jingoistic and Pollyanna the title, the more likely that basic rights and principles of free men are under assault. Instead of patriotic rejection of tyranny, we are asked to know your neighbor in order to report upon your neighbor. Your local bank is commanded to report suspicious activities to the feds. In the past decade, over 8 million suspicious activities reports have been filed. National security letters, basically warrants without judicial review, have been used to snoop on hundreds of thousands of Americans. Daily, millions of travelers are subject to invasive searches without probable cause. In the name of patriotism, Americans' emails and phone calls are monitored. Not just communications deemed of probable cause by an independent judiciary, but gazillions of communications. The number can't be revealed because it's a state secret. But the number is beyond normal cognition and beyond normal computational prowess. A gazillion is not an overstatement. When Winston renounced Julia, I cried. Okay, well, not the first time I read 1984, but the second time, 30 years later. Real men don't cry, or so they say, but when Winston finally renounces Julia, I cried. The point at which we renounce what we love is a point when grown men should cry. The first time I read 1984, I was profoundly sad the entire read, but I was a teenager, and teenagers are messed up for no reason at all. You know, the whole Holden Caulfield thing. The next time I read 1984, I was a 40-something, and I had experienced love and could understand what it could be like to renounce the person you loved. What would it take for you to renounce the one you love? What would it take for you to renounce your rights as free men and women? We fought for over 800 years to restrain the state. From the Magna Carta on, our tradition has been to fight to limit the power of the state. Would it take starvation and beatings to give up on your right to property? Would it take rats pressed up against your face to get you to renounce your right to a jury trial? Or would you let fear alone cause you to relinquish your guarantee to due process? Will we let fear of terrorism allow us to give up our most basic and a brave new world in high school? I had trouble relating to them. I understood and was wary of Big Brother, but took consolation in the fact that government did not have two-way televisions to monitor your every action. Government didn't have drone surveillance to monitor your every move. The desire by man to control his fellow man has always existed, as has the desire by fellow man to resist. Fellow man always had places to hide. Fellow man always had places to flee. One's thoughts, one's books, one's private actions were hard to control, discern, and disrupt. Dystopian novels were just that, bad utopias, but not practically possible. One could always sigh in relief that such surveillance, such invasion of privacy was not technologically possible. Until now. Now we have the technology. Drones that measure less than an inch, weigh less than an ounce, and hover noiselessly outside your bedroom window are not a dystopian future, but today's reality. The individualist who feared 1984, when it was written in 1949, need now shout from the top of his or her lungs, for technology has made the unthinkable thinkable.
Is to borrow and spend, and damn the future persists. America's society as we know it, it will collapse. You're serious about that?
Yes, I am serious about that. I realize that Senator Klobuchar, your family friend, has the best interests of the country at heart, but she has a fundamental misunderstanding of economics. I mean, here's what the government did. The government this morning borrowed money in order to pay interest on loans it has already received and spent. So it would be like us owing, you or me owing a mortgage payment and not having the money to make the payment and going out to borrow money to make the mortgage payment and expecting never have to pay it back.
So the government's addicted to spending.
Yes. Woodrow Wilson borrowed $30 billion to pay for World War I. We are still paying the interest on that. It still hasn't been paid back. Presidents and big government people like Senator Klobuchar are just interested in the political gain they get when they spread wealth around. They are not interested in the economic consequences of that debt. It reduces the value of the dollar. It causes inflation. Fully one-fifth all of the money that the federal government collects in taxes, $500 billion, is interest paid to interest on the loans the federal government has taken.
I know you believe that the president should have chosen to rein in the spending. So my next question is, when does it stop and does it?
I don't think it will stop under this president unless the Congress absolutely refuses to raise the debt ceiling. If Speaker Boehner had gone along with the majority of Republicans in the House and said, no, stop, no more borrowing, then the president would be without authority to borrow money to pay interest on the debt.
So here's a fact that people are going to be just absolutely stymied by. We are still paying interest on the $30 billion that Woodrow Wilson borrowed to pay for World War I.
Right, right. That's the
really?
That's the point that I make. Yes, really. Now, they paid back the people that that loaned the $30 billion, but they paid it back with additional loans. They just basically rolled it over. That $30 billion that Wilson used to fund the war between 1917 and 1919, we're talking about 95 years ago, has now cost us $60 billion. Because of all the interest that we have paid and the other fees attendant upon rolling it over.
Uh-huh.
The government never pays down the principal. The government doesn't care about that. It just cares about its
Here's
ability to
matters.
Spend
Republicans
cash
need a net gain of six Senate seats to take control of the Senate. They're likely to keep control of the House. The GOP establishment candidate was the state House Speaker. His name is Tom Tillis. Look at the vote board here. He needed to get above 40% to avoid a runoff. All those other challenges, those two you see on the board and a couple others inspired by the Tea Party and the grassroots base, Peter Hamby, the establishment spent a lot of money to try to keep Tom Tillis above 40%. Now he can turn his attention on the vulnerable Democratic incumbent Kay Hagan. How important is this in the establishment Tea Party war we've watched play out in recent years?
Well, I think it's very important for the establishment. I mean, it's a sort of a flawed frame to say that this is a classic establishment versus Tea Party narrative. There's two sort of grassroots-backed candidates, Greg Brannon and Mark Harris, didn't have a lot of money. They struggled to sort of get their message out. And Tillis coasted in the end, but he did have the help of outside groups. Oh, more than $2 million from the Chamber of Commerce and American Crossroads helped prop him up. He actually gave credit to those outside groups for providing him air cover, in his words. That's what he told reporters last night, John, after his victory speech. So this is big for them. They avoid a big headache. Democrats really wanted a 2.5-month Republican-on-Republican primary that would drag on, that would be expensive, that would possibly hurt the Republican Party. So this is a big early win for the establishment as they look to retake the Senate, John.
an early win in an important race, Robert Costa, and the establishment now will feel emboldened. The chamber is going into 10 House districts this week where you have establishment
Rhinos
candidates versus grassroots or Tea
it
Party
means,
candidates.
As far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a Rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real Rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party.
Frankly,
but to
I
their
just
particular
think that they've lost all credibility. You know, well, they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy that I had in mind.
Joining us now from Austin, Texas, Fox News analyst Karl Rove. You think that was a good strategy that Boehner excoriated the far right?
Well, let's be clear. What he's after are a group of Washington, D.C.-based groups, Club for Growth, Freedom Works, Heritage Action principally, that he believes have put his members in a bad place by, in his view, bullying and threatening them with consequences if they don't vote the way that
dozen Republicans in the House who are Cruz Republicans who basically threatened to bring the House down if John Boehner did not pursue this policy. John knew it was not going to work, but he probably had no choice. I understand his position. But I'm really more concerned about why more Republicans around the country didn't join me in denouncing Ted Cruz. I mean, now we have people who are on the sidelines who are coming forward, but we have to take a stand here. We cannot allow our party to be taken over by the likes of Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. I mean, these are people isolationists. I can
a battle at a place called Thermopylae. 300 brave Greeks held off a Persian army of 1 million men. A million, you understand this number?
I understand this number.
For 2 days, the Greeks made them pay so dearly, the Persian army lost all taste for battle and were defeated soon after.
What do you have in mind?
Take away the advantage of their guns. They're overconfident when we use that. Lure them close. Close enough for a sword.
You believe that man can change his destiny?
Anger Man does what he can until his destiny is revealed.
Senior Senator from Arizona urged this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten us in this mess. You know, my wife and I have two little girls at home. They're 5 and 2. When Caroline was born, our national debt was $10 trillion. Today it's nearly $17 trillion. In her short 5 years of life, the national debt has grown by over 60%. Madam President, what we are doing to our kids and grandkids, I think, is immoral. Now, I commend the Democrats in this body for their candor. The Democrats and President Obama have been very explicit that it is their intention to raise the debt ceiling and to do so with no conditions whatsoever, just to keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing money without any structural reforms to fix the problems. That is an intellectually consistent position. I think it is a dangerous position, but it is at least candid. And that is the reason why every day for 60 days the Democrats have opposed taking the debt ceiling off the table in this discussion. But unfortunately, one of the reasons we got into this mess is because a lot of Republicans were complicit in this spending spree. And that's why so many Americans are disgusted with both sides of this House, because we need leaders on both sides to do, as my friend from Virginia said, to roll up our sleeves, to compromise, to work together and fix the problem, fix the enormous fiscal and economic problems, stop bankrupting our country. What this issue is all about is very simple. Will we allow the debt ceiling to be raised in an unlimited amount with just a 50-vote threshold? And if the answer to that is yes, we have in effect just voted to raise the debt ceiling, because the Democrats hold a majority of this body, 55
Imagine
seats.
Imagine a time
and the
when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. You may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty.
You've got to rise, rise up, you wake up and rise, wake up and rise. Come on, so let them, take away your culture. So let them, take away your future. Rise up, you've got to rise. So let them, take away your culture. So let them, take away your future. Rise up.
Life is rough, it is unfair, and it is usually full of people and events that are not in your favor. Deal with it. That may sound cruel and uncaring given our contemporary fashion of thinking with our feelings, but it is what it is. The real issue is not that all of us are victims at one time or another. Rather, the issue is how do we react to reality? The current trend is to think, act, and feel like a victim, and a helpless one at that, leading to seeking some other to solve your pain. This is nothing more than an abdication of responsibility, and it is not limited by political stripes. Americans from all walks seek to get something from government by assigning power to men who promise to deliver it. This is a fallacy exploited by politicians in both parties, and even those outside of the duopoly. Whether your victimhood comes from some New World Order conspiracy leading you to desire anarchism or anarchic libertarianism, or it comes from a malformed desire for economic and social justice leading you to seek plunder of the exploiter class by the political class, matters very little. Even if your victimhood is that your view of an ideal, quote, traditional and Christian conservative America has been taken from you, it still leads you to desire a government that will restore order by regressing to some myth of the 1950s and an overly aggressive military ready to slay the foreign atheists. The problem isn't in politics. The problem is in having a victim mentality in the first place. You're a victim. We're all victims. At some point or another, you've been a victim. That's the way the world works. We all just got victimized by the RNC CLEC. That's what Pat Caddell called the consultant lobbyist establishment complex with their basic shenanigans at their RNC spring meeting, especially regarding Rule 10H, which basically gives them control of the debates. Now, the public reason for this is to wrest control from the left-stream media that is always maligning Republicans. But really, it's to give the CLEC all the power and control over the debates and to punish non-establishment candidates. And you're seeing this play out in the primaries, which, by the way, are happening right now. Are you busy doing something about them? Johnny Boehner was reelected by Ohio, and it's a good thing I don't have access to the nuclear football because I'd probably wipe Ohio right off the friggin' map. Tillis, the establishment loser, as you heard in that first clip, beat out the Tea Party candidate. What's going on here? Are you going to let the empire just keep rolling over you because you're a victim, or are you going to do something about it? The primaries are happening right now. Benghazi's going on. Is it a political ploy by the Republicans? Is it a phony scandal for the Democrats? How about we get to the truth, irrespective of party and anything else? Maybe that's an important thing. What about Ukraine? Are you a victim of that? Well, I don't live there, Rex, so I don't really care. Really? Because it's your money? And it's your bombs that are going to be involved in that, not to mention the fact that you've got a wuss for a president poking the Russian bear in the eye. What about Janet Yellen's hearing at the Fed? Did she victimize you? Well, I didn't even know that that she had a hearing this week in Congress. Well, yeah, is she victimizing you? You bet she's victimizing you. She's the mouthpiece for the Federal Reserve. Are you going to sit here and whine about Jekyll Island and a global new world order and fiat currency, or are you going to do something about it? That's the key. That's what you have to do. You may or may not be a victim. Either way, you have to quit acting and thinking like one. We get the government that we deserve. Our Constitution was set up for a people who truly desired the liberty our Creator has provided. But it was expected that we would also willingly exercise the responsibility and the duty that preclude it. In an address to the militia of Massachusetts, John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Of course, this is not the 18th century, and we've experienced a large gap, more like an abdication of institutional knowledge for about the last century. Hence, we have to recover that which was lost and apply the principles of liberty to contemporary times. Conservatives do not reject timeless principles. We hold on to them. But we must also deal with the world as it is, not as we wish it were. We don't believe in perfectibility. We know that the world is flawed. We know that we are flawed. Permanence and change are ever present, and yet the Constitution persists. However, it is rendered merely parchment unless we, the people, exercise our rights and our duties to keep it, or in this case, restore it both juridically and practically. Liberty is yours if you are predisposed to claim it. Victims, on the other hand, transfer responsibility. Victims cry foul. Victims are ruled by villains. Only the virtuous are free. Stand for liberty or fall for tyranny. It's up to you. When one decides that government has a larger role than being umpire in providing the means to coordinate the common conditions for individuals alone or in voluntary association to determine their own path, then freedom becomes nothing more than a privilege, and people are divided into two classes, the rulers and the ruled. Soft despotism renders us either serfs, outlaws, or sycophants. Why would this retrograde mentality be considered progress? You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and conservative libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. Stop being a victim. Stop thinking like a victim. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Rise Up, broadcasting to you from behind enemy lines in the Imperial City. Dude.
Me? There you go.
Hey.
And I am Trog, coming to you from my patio with a fire going on, thinking about that clip. Thinking about what you just said, you gave me a lot to think about. Not that I don't think too much as it is, but you also stole all my responses, so I'm going to have to dig deep there. You know, this concept, you know, villains, victims, and virtue. I've had an interesting week. I mean, I've been in, you know, it's spring, and I'm working in my yard, and I'm building cool stuff. I mean, I have like a, you know, a showcase park in my house, and I'm still working on it, and I really enjoy doing that because I like to build things and I like nature. But I also think a lot while I'm working in the dirt. I don't know why, but it, you know, it tends to be that way. And I think about deep things, and I think about where our country has come from. I think about the things that we've gone through in the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years, and I think about what we're doing around the world and how little people even understand what's going on with our foreign policy. Domestic policies all over the map. I mean, people, you know, are bitching about, you know, the debt ceiling and you know, taxes and Obamacare and Benghazi and the IRS and, you know, ah-de-da-de-da-de-da-de-da. And I kind of got burned out on it because it seems like, you know, in election season, they're just running the crap out of it, you know. And that's fine, you know, whatever. I mean, it's marketing. But this is a good topic because people have been victims for a long time in this country, and I see this a lot, and I say it a lot on my group when I'm responding to things going, you think this is new? You know, a comment that could be about any of the topics. I mean, the overreach of the federal government in terms of spying and snooping goes back to Bush and the Patriot Act, and I don't know if people are just incapable of getting on the internet and researching, but You know, it was exposed back then that they were overreaching the Constitution, and everybody had a big rip-roar about it, and then they forgot about it, and then they just kept doing it. And so along comes Obama going, wow, look at all this power George Bush consolidated in this office. Man, am I going to have a good freaking time, you know, turning this country into a neoliberal, fascist, neocon, neo-warmongering, communist conversion, new world order, whatever the hell he's trying to do. And pick your conspiracy, but he's doing it all, baby. You know, and the people on the right are whining. I guess that's why I just quit. I mean, I haven't listened to the news or a talk show for weeks, Rex, weeks, because I can't stand them. You know why? Because they just whine and moan and Obama this and Obama that. And then we go and we topple the government in Ukraine, and everybody goes, oh, those evil Russians. And I'm thinking, Putin didn't do that. The U.S. did that. Are you freaking stupid? You know, can you step back from cable news long enough to figure out that you are just a program sheep for mass media, which is basically handed its talking points from guess who? You know, your favorite villain in the White House. I mean, it's amazing to me that people will bitch and moan and complain and whine and scream and holler and then. And then Benghazi gets a new email, and then that's, oh, yeah, we got to get on that and stay on that 24/7. And then there's a plane that disappeared, and who gives a shit? You know, I mean, it's important, but it's only important if there's a solution. And I think that's the key thing. I really believe that's the difference between, you know, being a victim and being an overcomer. And this is not. I'm going to tell a short story, okay, and some people know this, a lot of people do from past radio shows, but I had a son that had a cardiac arrest, ventricular fibrillation, you know, heart going into cardiac arrest at 14 years old, and he was, 11 minutes and 15 seconds to recovery. Well, everybody knows that 5 minutes, your brain's dead, and 3 minutes, you're already getting brain damage. So he survived, very handicapped. But he was in comas for 7 months. He was, it tore our life apart. We sat through Thanksgiving and Christmas in intensive care. And, you know, it seems like a story of somebody else because we just do what we do now. And we have a full care handicapped son at home. But I remember people used to, oh, you guys are amazing. Oh, you guys are heroes. Oh, how do you do it? And I'm thinking, for one, I have a lot of faith. And for two, I've already been through a lot of shit in my life, and survived. And I learned how, at a young age, through tough times, because I left home at, 18 years old and went to Alaska, 1,000 miles from friends and family and any support system, and I, toughed it out, through ups and downs. And I remember, and we ended up in the news a lot because we did a lot of advocacy work for getting AEDs in schools and, educating people on, this arising trend in young people having ventricular fibrillations for various reasons. I'm not going to get technical. I mean, I spoke for the Heart Association, was in the news multiple times. But I remember people would look at you and they'd always try to peg, how are you doing? That emotional content, that is so American. The oh my God, concept. And I used to tell people, I said, tragedy is going to happen. You live long enough, people are going to die. You live long enough, people are going to get crippled in accidents that are close to you. People are going to get cancer. People are going to get run over. Bad things are going to happen. Somebody's going to get in a, injured in a crime scenario. I mean, it's a violent freaking world. And human beings are fallible, and we're weak. We're susceptible to damage. And I used to tell people, it's not that bad things, aren't going to happen. They're going to happen. But the key to life, and there's scripture behind this, but there's a key to life is how you handle it and how you recover from it and then what you do with it. In other words, do you do something good with it? When my son was still in comas, we were doing news programs and speaking for the Heart Association, and we were doing things, and we were on the run, and you know, when my son came out of his coma, you know, we had throw him in the wheelchair van, and we'd go speak and raise money to put AEDs in schools and do these things. And people are like, you guys are crazy. And I go, no, it's part of the healing process. This thing has happened to our family, okay? And yeah, it, trust me, it was tough, okay? A child, you know what I mean, in this kind of situation in a family is a devastating thing. It's like a 95% divorce rate scenario. And financially devastating, but the process of healing, especially for me, and also for my to get my oldest son involved, because we had this kid where all of our energy was put on him. But I had another son that was 15, 16 years old, and you can get a displaced, you know, focus in a family, and you can screw up a sibling in these kind of things. I mean, there, you know, I could go on for hours about this. But we chose to get involved and save some lives and attempt through our experience and our tragedy to help other people not have to go through what we went through, whether it was placing AEDs in schools or it was educating people on, you know, this thing this that young kids were dying at an increasing rate of ventricular fibrillation, sudden cardiac arrest. And so we got involved, and it – the selfless act of moving past your personal little issue is what makes you a better human being. And I'm not saying I'm a great human being because I'm a feisty, you know, mad most of the time, not about my son, but you know what I mean, about life and about watching my country fall apart and people sit around on their lazy asses and post the frickin' news of the day. And then a guy like Greg Brannon, who had great credentials and had great potential, not even get frickin' supported to where he could fight a good fight. And I just – and I think about – you and I have been doing this 2 frickin' years. We went through the primary together, not totally. We met later. You know, but I was in the fight, in the primary, in my own way. And then everybody, you know, people started linking up and getting to know each other and who were the real, you know, the real fighters and people who had a long-term vision to try to save our freaking country before we end up, you know, like Rome or the USSR or whatever version of terror you want to, you know, think about. And here we are in the midterms. You and I have been talking about midterms since the primary was over, basically. That if you don't get involved in midterms and you don't fight hard, this establishment cleck, and I ain't talking the Democrats. It's an obvious thing you want to get rid of a commie Democrat. I mean, come on. That's obvious. So that doesn't take any energy or any stress. But you've got a group of Republicans who've been embedded in that government for a long time. These are the people who gave us 5 debt ceiling increases under Bush. These are the people who gave us the Patriot Act. No Child Left Behind. If you're pissed at Common Core, you should be pissed at Republicans because they gave us No Child Left Behind and doubled the size of the frickin' Department of Education, which has led to this monstrosity, and most people blame Obama. It wasn't Obama. It started under Bush and actually goes even farther back. But that was it. But you've got to get clear on who the enemy is. Because if you're not clear on who the enemy is, besides the ones that whoever's trying to get elected is pointing over there going, you know, it's like the whole Russia thing. It's like I've never heard so many lies in my life about a situation that I have in the Ukraine. And yet people don't even get it. They won't even discuss it. They won't even do the research. They just go listen to Fox and listen to some frickin' neocons and warmongers, the same assholes that got us into Iraq based on lies, and then they go, oh, yeah. Yeah, Putin's the devil, you bet. Mm-hmm. You know, and there they are. And that's their depth of knowledge on foreign policy and what's going on. And if people don't wake up, I have no idea when this thing's going to fall. I just see this spiraling, you know, and it's picking up speed, and it's spiraling. We got an insane administration who hates this country. We got a bunch of neocon, you know, warmongering Republicans who want all that power for themselves so they can spy on you and launch a few more wars because they're all tied to the defense industry, you know, the warmongering assholes that have gotten us into 100 countries around the world with over 800 bases while we're broke, you know. And we go, yeah, we got to get Republicans in there. And I'm thinking, we got Republicans in there. We got to get rid of some of these bastards because they're going to get us into World War III. They have nothing more on their mind that will excite them more than to get us in a war with Russia. Are you freaking kidding me? These people are insane, and I would almost say evil. So you got to wake up. And you got to get, you know, you got to sit down sometime and light a fire on your patio and sit down with a piece of paper and go, what do I believe in? What's important to me? What about my country do I love? What makes me an American? And start finding people who have those perspectives and quit voting these assholes like Boehner and Tillis and Corker, the frickin' that guy, man, I bet I would not let him near a red button. He'd probably just push it because it's red and blow something up. These people are freaking nuts, you know? And I can't even relate to the Republican Party. Unfortunately, you got two parties at the national level is what you've talked about over and over and over again. I wish we had a wide open platform and all the parties had equal access to the debates and equal access to getting on the ballots, ballot access, it's called. And I wish all that stuff. I wish for a lot of things, but there's a lot of crap that is not going to happen right now. And right now we have a chance to clear out some assholes that were there that got us into the last two wars that have literally made enemies of America across the land and have literally put us in debt till kingdom come, you know, and given and consolidated power into the Oval Office so you can bitch about Obama every day. You've got to get rid of these guys because if they get power, nothing changes. Nothing will change. And when I see Brandon get defeated by the likes of Tillis, I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the best we got right now? You know, and Boehner, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, the guy, he may live forever. He's pickled. Anyway, stop being a victim. There are villains, but you got to understand, they're on both sides of the aisle. And virtue is doing what's right regardless how you feel. That's really what it boils down to. You know, we could get into scriptures, we could, you know, quotable quotes and, you know, and Braveheart and Gladiator and these guys against all odds. And we love the hero. Be the damn hero. Because we need more heroes that ain't got their face stuck in a frickin' video game or their computer or a TV being programmed by somebody else's concept of what they want them to be. Read a book. You know? The greatest minds that I've ever learned from in my life read constantly because it works your brain in a different way. And I swear, man, I am begging people to step up and quit fighting over stupid frickin' things between libertarians and conservatives and focus on winning. Because that's one thing the Democrats, they may be screwed up and just taking our country to hell as fast as they can, but you know what they're really good at? Sticking together. Regardless of the all, I mean, they have more fractions in their party than we do in the Republican Party. But when it comes to winning, they lockstep and go, there's the enemy, we need to win. Very simple.
A hive.
So anyway, there's
they're
my opening.
Yeah, good opening. You sharpened your club. They're a hive mind, and they're a horde. And generally speaking, if you're going to plunder and pillage, you need a unified horde or you will get routed. And that's why we are getting routed. And this is the interesting thing. You need to be united to work together, but libertarians and conservatives tend to be very individual. And even though it is the left that's always droning on and on about diversity and differentiation and multiculturalism, they are a monolith. They are a monolith. We are the ones who are diverse, but sometimes that's actually in certain activities to our detriment because everybody wants to do it their way. And we end up divided and we end up conquered. And then we end up whining like
victims. Oh, it's because our votes don't matter because of the Diebold machines and Soros and the New World Order, or these libertarian teabaggers are infiltrating the khaki blue blazer tight-ass WASP party and we can't have that, or you got, you know, who knows what other excuses you can come up with and project, and it gives you sort of an empowerment, right? Because you're a victim. The circumstances going on around you, it's not your fault. You're powerless. You know what the right thing is. You want to do the right. You know what could be better for everybody. You have all the answers, but you're powerless. That's the victim mentality. Virtue comes from the Latin, which means power or strength. You do have the power. It is within you to do something about it, but not if you're whining like a victim. And so what happens? We project, and who's the easiest target? Those that are closest to you. When you have a real bad day at work or in your business or at school or whatever, you tend not to take it out on those people. You tend to go home and take it out on your family. Husbands and wives argue. Kids argue with parents. We take out the frustrations of the world on those that are closest to us. So what do libertarians and conservatives do? We take out our frustrations on each other. Libertarians and conservatives are not exactly the same. And the Republican Party has never really been friendly to libertarians and conservatives. It is a relatively progressive corporatist special interest party and has been from the beginning in 1854, founded on the ash pile of the Whigs. We've gotten in there sometimes, and they don't like it. We take their power away from them, and they despise that. So you have to realize that we're not welcome in this party. So maybe we go to another party. Well, that's fine, except that the Democrats and the Republicans control every precinct, all the ballot access. Now they control the debates and the media, and so you'll never get heard in another party. Now, that's not the way it's supposed to be. In fact, hardly anything is the way it's supposed to be, which is why you feel like a victim. Well, you have to do something about it. And the only way you do something about it is find out, how is it supposed to be? What is it like now? And now you have two points, and there is a tension between them. Your job is to work on that tension. Now, that means that you want to bring it back to the principles of the Constitution. But you're not going back to 1776, 1787, or 1950. We're going forward to 2015 and 2016. You have to deal with the world as it is. There's permanence and change, and they cause tension, and you have to reconcile it instead of throwing your hands up in the air and crying victim. Now, you were just victimized. If you are on the right side of the equation, if you are basically anti-left, meaning anti-statist, anti-collectivist, if you want some modicum of limited government, and you're not quite so far to the right that you're an anarchist, you're probably looking these days more or less to the Republican Party. And the Republican Party wants you to vote for them and door knock for them and raise money for them, but they don't want to represent any of your ideas or stand up for the rule of law or the Constitution. They want to fund the government on a larger and larger basis. In fact, one can highlight the difference between the two parties, and I'm talking about the leadership of the two parties, not necessarily the membership or even some of the candidates, but the leadership of the two parties is that the Republicans want to do the same exact thing the Democrats do, only the Republicans want to do it more efficiently. Chris, unless you got something you want to throw on that, I've got a caller.
Do it.
Matthew?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
All right, this is Matthew Hurt, and you are hopefully calling in to tell us a little bit about what the CLEC just might have done at the RNC spring meeting, which I believe was in Tennessee, am I correct?
It was. It was in Memphis just last week, Wednesday through Saturday, and you guys have just been talking about, you know, how the parties keep and hold and increase their power. And turns out they did it one more time. There was a debate over dictating the number and nature of Republican primary debate. And so what they passed, I believe 152-7, just on Thursday was a restriction on the types of debates that Republicans could attend, and in the Republican primary cycle, which is going to be significantly cut down anyway because of the new primary and convention schedule. But the Republican primary cycle, Republican candidates will now only be able to participate in debates sanctioned by a committee of 13 on the RNC. Five members are picked by the national chairman, and two are selected from each of the regional sections of the country that the party has divided up. And so that means what we will see, or what they want to do, what Chairman Priebus and others said this would cut back on, were instances of people like Candy Crawley who would take control of the debate. But if you remember, in 2012, Candy Crawley didn't moderate a Republican debate. So this has nothing to do, or very little to do, with those types of concerns. And it's going to, I think, pressure Republican candidates not to attend large forums. You know, say a mega church pastor in Texas wants to host a forum on social issues. Well, if that is, if there are 5, 10, 15,000 attendees, if it is live streaming on the internet, and if a number of candidates accept an invitation, is that a sanctioned debate? Who gets to define what that is? And if you participate in a non-sanctioned debate, then you're not allowed to participate in any of the sanctioned debates. So essentially they're removing your ability to compete on a national stage in front of other Republican candidates.
And Matthew, I'm assuming that that's not the only penalty. I mean, I heard that they were considering that if someone does participate in these things, not only do they get missed out on the sanctioned debates, but they could be stripped of their delegates. Is that something that happened?
So right out of the gate in January at the winter meeting in D.C., Chairman Priebus charged, like I said, right out of the gate and said, well, we're going to strip you of 30% of your delegates. Well, it turns out that was a little too harsh. But he told high-dollar donors, he told anybody who would listen that he was going to strip you of your delegates. So that didn't come to fruition. This is a compromise of some sort by the folks who wanted to take more delegates and the folks who didn't want to penalize within that realm at all. And now they're just the only punishment is that you cannot participate in any other sanctioned debate. But yes, the discussion was as harsh as removing 30% or more of the delegates you had accumulated. By just simply going to, you know, say the NAACP wants to have a Republican forum, or say Americans for Prosperity or Freedom Works wants to have a forum. If you go to that, then you're not allowed to go to any other debates that are held at the national level. So it's essentially, you know, silencing your campaign. There is a great deal of earned media that is garnered from, you know, if you remember the Republican debate cycle from 2012, it seemed each time we had a debate, another candidate peaked. You know, we had Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain, and as the voters were subjected to or had the opportunity to listen to their comments, some other candidate saw a spike in the polls. So this is an attempt certainly to shorten that and then to discourage candidates from speaking to other groups if they're not sanctioned by the party.
Well, I mean, other groups, like, let's face it, I mean, what other groups do, quote, you know, conventional Republicans in the successful, let's see, Dole, McCain, Romney, Jeb Bush model go? They don't go anywhere except to Republican events. It seems like the only types of Republicans who go to, I don't know, UC Berkeley or the, black colleges or who speak to, non-traditional Republican audiences aren't favored by the CLEC. And, of course, I'm speaking specifically of someone like, oh, I don't know, Rand Paul. And so this seems to be designed specifically to shut him up.
Well, and you know, one of the things that the Chairman Priebus and members of the RNC said was that that, oh, you know, Rand Paul supports this and all the candidates support this. And while there may be a grain of truth to that, it is true that most candidates probably support a shortened debate period. But we have a shortened debate period because of the new primary and convention schedule. As they say, the devil is in the details. So what do they actually believe? Does Rand Paul believe that a candidate or a number of candidates, say there are 8 Republican candidates and 2 or 3 of them want to participate, you know, maybe John Huntsman and Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney round 3 don't want to go to the Americans for Prosperity debate, but maybe Rand Paul and, you know, Scott Walker and somebody else want to participate in a third party debate. That's, you know, that's sort of what we're seeing transpire here as far as, you know, these candidates said broadly, the potential candidates said broadly that they supported some sort of restriction, but the details were never hashed out, and I don't fully believe that any one candidate, be it Rand Paul or Chris Christie or whomever, you know, they approached for 2016, said, okay, absolutely, this is exactly what I want to see come from the committee.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on the gravitas of the potential candidate, because if you're already getting, you know, media time, softball questions, and controlled debates, you know, you might be in favor of this. But it seems to me that basically the Republican leadership has just decided that what they had to do illegally in 2012, they're now sequentially in each meeting codifying so that it is, quote, legit. And it's basically putting the RNC at the national level fairly squarely in control of the entire process. And to me, this illustrates the problem with conservative/libertarian voters, that we think that showing up at the polls or raising money or posting a Facebook meme is going to do something, and yet very, very few of us actually participate or call our members. I mean, there's only 3 committee persons from each state and Commonwealth, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, the first meeting that I attended, May of last year in Los Angeles, those committee members got a lot of phone calls, and they definitely were feeling the heat. So as I've said on your show before, calling elected officials and calling those who are to be held accountable is an effective way, especially, you know, these guys, these national committee members never get phone calls from constituents because nobody really thinks of them as, you know, they're not your senator, they're not your congressman, they're doing party matters. And most people who consider themselves Republican or Democrat don't also, I mean, they're not as tuned in to the national committee structure, even the most diehard folks. So when they get just a dozen phone calls in the lead up to a meeting, you know, when I was in Los Angeles, these guys would come up to me and other conservative members of the committee and say, you know, my goodness, I've received a dozen phone calls and 100 emails, and my constituents are really upset about this. And so they heard, but as we move further and further away from that May meeting, May of last year, and moving forward, it really the interest diminishes among the grassroots. And so now we're back into the lull of complacency, and these folks are, you know, the vote to pass this restriction, this debate restriction, passed 152-7. And I can tell you,
3 of them were from Virginia, right?
3 from Virginia. The committee woman, Diana Arock from Nevada, and her proxy, she voted for whoever was not in attendance from their delegation. She is fantastic. Marty Halverson, mm-hmm. the national committee woman from Wyoming, she is absolutely fantastic. And then Ashley Ryan's proxy. Ashley Ryan is the national committee woman from Maine. She's the youngest, I believe, national committee woman mm-hmm. or member of the committee altogether. And she was elected in the grassroots sort of Ron Paul surge in Maine, mm-hmm. and her proxy voted in opposition as well. So those were the 7 votes. And when Committeeman Morton Blackwell from here in Virginia asked that the vote be recorded, they had a voice vote on whether or not they wanted to record the vote, and it was overwhelmingly no. Overwhelmingly, these guys don't want to be held accountable. They don't want you to know that they're not voting the way they should be voting.
Yep. Chris, do you want to chat with Matthew about that?
Yeah. Well, I just had thoughts rolling through my mind, and the challenge that we have is it's not bad enough in this country to a point. I mean, you know, we've got a $3.6 trillion budget, and we have actually, if you total up state and local and federal, it's over $5 trillion a year that the government spends to keep everybody complacent. You know, that's all the programs and the funding and welfare and unemployment and disability and, you know, and so, you know, you don't see, you know, we're in the middle of a depression and yet everybody's eating good and, you know, everything's fine. So they're not paying attention. When people hurt bad enough, they're going to get serious. But basically what you're saying, I mean, Rex and I promoted the heck out of the other RNC meetings, why it was important to make the phone calls and you know, what was coming down the pike and what they did. At, you know, we covered the convention last year, exposed all the lies and the corruption and the shenanigans and, you know, until we were blue in the face. Yeah, people, I guess, were pissed for a little while, but now we're back to, okay, what airline has disappeared, and, oh, it's Benghazi again, and, oh, we're in a Cold War with Russia again, that those dirty communists. Oh, wait, the communists are over here now. You know, so it's that same dynamics. You know, we have the attention span of a freaking turtle in this country, you know, and we're just totally controlled by the what we watch on TV and reality TV and Fox News and whoever, you know, cable news. It's 6 o'clock. Let's tell you how to think. Let's tell you how to feel. Let's tell you who to fear. Let's tell you what to be mad about, you know, and let's not tell you the truth about anything. And that's the country that we live in. And it's taken a while to get here, and we're in the middle of it. And well, there's one goal. There's one goal with this. And I'll let you go. One goal, Jeb Bush. That's the goal. And all the shit's being set up, so, you know, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line. It's all about Bush. You know, they got some more wars to run. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I do think that, you know, you're right in the extent that I believe that Lee Atwater, the Republican strategist from the 70s, 80s, and sort of the Karl Rove before there was a Karl Rove, he said that reporters are lazy and sufficiently harassed by deadlines. I think we're, as individuals, and when I talk to people about dealing with, you know, potential campaign staffers dealing with reporters, I tell them this, you know, reporters are busy. People are busy. We have soccer practice. We have church. We have the potluck. We have work. We have, you know, some of us have children. Some of us have obligations. Some of us are in the hospital. So we, and we're basically, you know, at the cafeteria of news, so we go, it's crazy, you know, we're so highly selective in what we can consume as far as news. We can watch Fox News, or we can watch MSNBC, or we could only read the blogs, or we could only, you know, occasionally listen to, I'm a big fan of NPR, and I watch MSNBC basically because somebody on our side has to be watching and has to be listening, but I think that we are sufficiently consumed with what's going on in our own lives that we do forget, and it's sort of like the fog in the pot of boiling water. It's just been the temperature has been slowly ratcheted up for long enough that we don't realize we're sitting in a pot of boiling water. And so it is going to take something, and I don't know what that is. I don't know when it will happen. But it's going to take something that is going to jerk a majority of Americans awake and realize that, one, the system is broken. You know, we've got politicians in both parties, admittedly, who go to Washington and grow government. We've got politicians at our state capitals who grow government, and nobody's really holding them accountable.
Well, that's the problem.
So it's gonna, yeah. And
the accountable part.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a few good ones, and then when we elect the good ones, the fundraising machine kicks into high gear. You know, you have Justin Amash in Michigan, who basically the Chamber of Commerce is running a campaign against him because he doesn't believe in doling out your taxpayer dollars to big businesses. And I don't think that's a controversial opinion to hold. I don't think that I should pay money to Washington and then Washington should pick companies like Solyndra or whomever. This is something that Senator Paul hit home in a speech he gave at the RNC last week. 9 out of 10 small businesses fail. And so for a government to pick which of those, you know, to give money to, they're wrong 90% of the time. So,
yeah.
You know, we're giving...
Well, they don't care. But, Matthew, they don't care if they fail.
What's the matter?
And they just bail them out, and a handful of their buddies who gave them donations, you know, get to walk away with millions of dollars and people lose their jobs. This system, and I'm not just going to say Democrats because it's Republicans too, both sides of the aisle, is so corrupt at every level from your community to your state to the federal level, is so beyond reality. We're $1 trillion a year more in federal budget during basically no economic growth for 5 years, basically with $1 trillion being printed by the Fed to prop us up, you know, digging us into a hole we will never get out of without, you know, a huge war or a crash. You know what I mean? It's going to take something drastic. And it's so corrupt. Everybody gets a piece of that pie, even people in their home. Half this country receives some form of trickle-down federal benefits, whether it's fuel, you know, subsidies or welfare or disability or whatever. We are all sucking off the tit of government, or teat, if you want to pronounce it right. Okay, so...
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem, and it's not just Democrats. That's the problem. This us versus them game that's being played right now, that's kind of one of the biggest reasons I quit. I couldn't watch news anymore, and I couldn't listen to talk radio anymore because I was just sick of the bull crap because, you know, they're talking this crap like it's all Obama, and I'm going, it ain't all Obama. This has been going on for a long time. You know, who took us off the gold standard? A Republican. Who gave us the Department of Education, the Department of Energy? You know, I mean, come on. People need to get off this team game if we're ever going to win. We need to elect good people who care about this country and don't care about figuring out how they're going to milk the system and make sure their buddies get rich if they get elected, because that's both sides of the damn aisle. You show me anybody outside of a Rand or a Lee or, you know, a few of these guys, anybody who hasn't made a bloody-ass fortune for themselves and for the people who got them there. You know, it
is professional
wrestling. This is Rome before it fell. And I say that all the time, and people must think I'm crazy, you know, on my group, you know, the shit I post. But I'm like going, wake the hell up. It's over. This game is over, but they're like heroin addicts. They will not stop on their own.
And it's been working,
you know,
for them, Chris, so they won't stop because it's been working. And then we're at the top of the hour. Let me get some housekeeping in real quick, and then we'll go on. Matthew,
good.
Did you want to stick around, or do you have to run somewhere?
I've got to run. I really appreciate what you guys do. It's excellent programs like yours, and I do want to give a shout-out to the you guys are engaged in this, the Liberty following the RNC with Liberty folks, people like Nicole Revels from North Carolina, Amy from Texas, and there are so many who follow these guys around and try to hold them accountable. And we, you know, it's an uphill battle, but we have elected some in the last few years who are doing a good job, and we just have to, one, protect them, and two, send them reinforcements.
Absolutely. Matthew, real quick before you go, because you mentioned some important people, you know, like Jeremy Blosser and Brian Doherty and people who are actually following around at these RNC meetings trying to hold these people accountable. A lot of people might have the desire to do something like that, but they might, again, feeling like victims, feel that they don't know what they're doing, they don't know the rules, they don't know how to go about it, so they feel that they're not qualified to do these things even though it's their right and their duty as a citizen. Where can they go to get this training? Is the Leadership Institute the kind of place that will help people understand how to do these things so they can hold these politicians accountable?
I mean, there's grassroots training there. A lot of this party stuff, though, you just have to pick up the rules, which are available probably online at the RNC's website, and read the rules, understand what the rules say, and read Robert's Rules of Order. And so if you want to attend these meetings, you can attend. They're fairly expensive to attend. To register, you have to be registered by a member of the committee, so you have to find a friendly who will allow you to attend, and then you have to decide whether or not, you know, if you can travel out there. And I think the folks I mentioned previously, they do a really good job of putting this stuff online to where it's viewable. You don't necessarily have to attend the meeting to see what's going on, so that can save you, you know, significant money. But also, you know, reach out to your family and friends if you do want to attend these, and raise money among your friends and say, look, I'm trying to go hold these guys accountable. Can you spare $10, $15, $20 to help me cover the cost to attend? But, yes, on the flip side, Grassroots Training at the Leadership Institute, other company, there are other organizations that do it as well. Get into one of those. They teach you how to hold politicians accountable, and those tactics work for elected members of your political party of choice as well.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much. I was hoping you were going to plug the Leadership Institute. But thanks for calling in. Keep us posted of what you're doing anytime, and we appreciate it, Matt. Keep it up.
Thanks so much. Have a good night, guys.
All right. I just want to point out what Matthew was talking about, and I think that this is really crucial here. You can make a difference. Just recently, here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, in District 7, now District 7, Congressional District 7, is Little Eric Cantnot's district. And every couple of years, they have a mass meeting to elect the new chairman of the Republican Party there. And so since it's Little Eric Cantnot's district, and he's the number two rhino in the House, you know, you'd figure that carries a lot of clout. So they spent a lot of money, and they were trying to get his buddy Linwood Cobb to make it, but there was a challenger, Fred Gruber, who was more of the grassroots Tea Party guy, and enough people showed up, and enough people participated, enough people were active, that even with little Eric Cantnot making his big speech there with all his big spending money, the Tea Party guy won. That's how you take over the party. But you can't do it if you only show up in November to vote for their rhino. You've got to participate and get other people participating sooner. And that's what we're doing here, and we're broadcasting to do this 9 p.m. Eastern every Sunday, and nobody knows that this show exists. Chris and I do this. We do it as a labor of love because we want this country to get righted. But nobody knows this show exists unless you tell them. So we appreciate everybody who shared this on Facebook, who sent it out on Twitter, who has invited people personally. Nothing works better than a personal invitation. You know, just tell someone about it in person, send them the link, and just get them to start thinking differently about grassroots politics on the conservative slash libertarian side. That's what you have to do. All of the shows that we've done, and Chris mentioned the ones from the primaries and everything else, are available anytime you want on our Blog Talk Radio page. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. The show page is there. You scroll down. All the shows are listed. You just click on the title. It's a hyperlink. It plays right in your browser. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, there's a download link. You right-click on that. You get an MP3, which you can listen to your MP3-enabled device. You can email it to people. You can burn CDs, take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Tea Party meetings, your Republican Party meetings. It doesn't mean you agree with everything we say or agree with every perspective we have, but it lets people think differently about what's going on and get them inspired to actually work round the clock. This is not a spring-November type of thing. This is an all-year thing. 2016 is going to be decided by 2014. And 2014 is being decided right now in the primaries. We've got two coming up this Tuesday, really big ones 2 weeks from now. Get involved. You can make phone calls. You can send money. Don't send it to the party. Send it directly to the candidate. You can get people turned out to participate. A little bit of turnout in these primaries, a little bit of turnout at these Republican Party meetings can make a huge difference. It's up to you. Don't be a victim. Don't let the villains run the show. Take charge of it. You're an American. This is your duty, and it's your right. Call the number 646-649-1013. That's 646 646-649-1013. If you're on Facebook, please go to our show page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and join Chris's group, that's Liberty's Talk, on Facebook. Chris, you want to throw anything in there, or you want to get into some clips?
No, I just want to throw one little story in. I was just going through the group, people posting stuff. Man, Matthew's a great guy. Yeah, he just, you know, he's young, he's involved, he's sharp, he's, you know, clear on who he is as a person. You know, he's such a great example of what a true citizen is supposed to be. You know, I'm glad that, we've hooked up with him and he comes on, or you hooked up with him. But I was going to tell you a story, because just a short story, because this is so important to understand how apathetic this country is. You know, we get a 36-37% turnout during midterms, which are extremely important elections. We had a 0.9% increase in 2010, which gave us, you know, sweeping wins across the country, you know, with the Tea Party movement. And then I don't know what happened to people. I really don't. You know, it must be something they're putting in the water, or the chemtrails, who the frick knows, you know, radio signals to shut people's minds down. But the apathy is just frustrating as hell right now. But we get like 50% turnout during the four-year cycle, the presidential cycle. So half the country gets off their ass and does something. And you know, most of them aren't even involved in the primaries. They don't even know what the hell's going on. That's why you get those spikes from debates. You know, they hear somebody and go, "Oh, that was so wonderful. I'm going to vote for him." You know, it's just, you know, they don't even know. They don't even look at people's records. If they looked up records, Rick Santorum would have never gotten 14 states. Oh my God. Anyway. Romney would never have won. Come on. The guy's got a – I mean, he's more liberal than a Democrat if you look at his record. So – but here's the story, and this is important. I've been you know me. I do a lot of foreign policy stuff, and I've been tracking this whole Ukraine thing. Well, southeastern Ukraine, two districts, two counties, so to speak, or states, actually. You know, it'd be like Washington and Oregon – are trying to vote for autonomy, not to rejoin Russia, but they want autonomy. They want a federation. They want a republic. They don't want a centralized government. They don't want a bunch of neo-Nazis to control their lives. They want to have more say in their government. They voted with an 80% turnout today while dozens and dozens of unarmed people were being freaking killed. And when I look at stuff, I kind of almost got tears in my eyes, because when I look at that determination for self-determination and not to be controlled by the EU and the U.S. puppets and the, you know, they got 36 Nazis in that frickin' government that they put together after they had their little, you know, U.S.-controlled coup, you know, back in February. And there were people getting shot and killed by these Nazis and these Blackwater people, you know, that they put into the National Guard and sent out to these states because they don't want them to vote. And there's videos all over the frickin' place. And I see that, and I'm thinking, that's what we used to understand as Americans. And no media coverage, because nobody wants you to see self-determination from anybody in the world, including in this country. And it's heartbreaking to think that it's not getting coverage and that people are willing to die for the right to vote for independence, and we can't even get more than 37% of the people to show up for a frickin' midterm. That's frustrating to me when I see that kind of parallel. Anyway,
the price of apathy. Oh, you're right. That's a great point, and it's the price of apathy. And here's the thing. You see,
they were picking people off and shooting them at polling booths,
oh, yeah,
man.
Well, here's the thing. You see, those people are working to get something because they know what the yoke of slavery is like in their experience, in their life. They've had it overtly, not some, you know, invisible chains, yeah, like we have here, but real
from the Soviet Union to the Nazi takeover, they've lived some crap. And they want to be free.
So it's within, it's within their memory.
And they're killing them.
That's right.
And they're killing them.
Yeah. Now, we've had it here for so long. We've had it for so long. We take it for granted. You know, one man, one vote. I get a right to vote. Everything's hunky-dory in America. You're living on the inertia. You are living on the remnants of the freedom that patriots have bled and died to give you. And it's like a fish in water. You don't notice it. You don't know that you're in water. And what's happening is it's being eroded and taken, and it's dying on the vine, and we're unaware of it because we take it for granted. And we think that when we get to go vote for the blue team or the red team or the elephants or the donkeys, that somehow things will change. And they don't, because it's all about the incentives of an overblown government. The Constitution was designed to reduce it. It understood that human nature is inherently corrupt. All of us, the best of us, are likely to be corrupt when given power. So they divided it. They checked it. And the biggest check was not the separation of powers across the federal government. The biggest check was the vertical check of powers, which is the states. Oh, well, Rex, I don't know. The state governments can be just as bad. You're damn right. The friggin' homeowners association can be real bad and tyrannical. That's not the point. The point is the states had certain powers that they delegated to the federal government and reserved all other powers for themselves and the people. The people are the ones who are supposed to do this. We are supposed to be the ones enforcing the law. We are supposed to be the ones holding them in check. But we've given that up because we've had it too good. We've had it too easy. And so now when we see something going wrong, we cry victim and we dial 911. You're supposed to be the first responder. You're supposed to be the law. You're supposed to be the one who holds them accountable. And you're supposed to be the virtuous people from which these citizen statesmen are culled. Not some class of banking lawyer-connected assholes, which is what you have, and then you scream victim. That's the problem. That's what has to change. Call the number 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And one of the things that you have to stop believing is the rhetoric, and as Chris pointed out and Matthew pointed out, that spike that comes after the debate, because you are thinking with your friggin' feelings. Your heart will lead you astray. Unless you lead your heart through virtue, it will lead you astray. And that's what happens. They get up and they give their flowery speeches and rah, 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 and you're waving your Gadsden flag and you're all pumped up and ready to go, and then you get Jeb Bush. Because you were thinking with your emotions and you weren't doing the work. You were waving a friggin' flag. And that's when you fall for people like Mike Huckster Huckabee, Jeb Bush III, Willard Shit Romney, Bob Dole, who basically tried to thwart the entire Reagan agenda. That's the guy. You see, that's what happens. They foist this upon you because you are thinking with your feelings and you're waving a flag and holding up a sign and you're not doing the hard work like showing up at your mass meetings and your district meetings and getting people who believe in the Constitution in there to control those seats so that we can get more RNC committee people who actually will vote with Morton Blackwell and the entire Virginia delegation and Diane Orrick to stop stupid rules like penalizing candidates if they don't go with the, quote, sanctioned debates. That's how
that's
it happens.
Crap. That's so much bull crap. I mean, that's basically saying that, I mean, Rex, I mean, do people understand this stuff when we talk about it? I mean,
I wonder
sometimes. You understand that when you're campaigning, what gives you your voice is your ability to go out from location to location to location to meeting to meeting to meeting to venue to venue to venue, you know, being on television and being in the debates. What they're saying is we're going to have these six or eight debates. I can't remember if it was eight or something, six or eight. And you can't do anything else. We're going to control you all the way through. Don't you understand that's totalitarianism? That's communism? And that's your frickin' RNC. That is your Republican Party. That's who these people are. And the only reason this happens, two reasons. One, people are not involved. And two, you have a cleft a group of people who've been in there for 15, 20, 30 years who are totally encased in their corruption, whether it be Boehner or, you know, I mean, Rick Priebus, my God, how could you people reelect him? You know, he's just he's a bean counter yes man. You know, we had a guy in 2010, all that success, and what did they do? They fired the
Michael
guy.
Steele.
You know?
Michael Steele.
They fired, they fired Steele for giving them success. You know why? It was the wrong success. It was real people. It was grassroots. And they don't want real people. They don't want you to be represented. They want to control it all. That's who these assholes are. You spend all your time, not you, but you, listeners, spend all your time worrying about Obama and the Democrats. You're not paying attention to you got to understand the enemy in your camp is more deadly and dangerous than the enemy that you face across the field with a gun pointed at you. Because you don't know when he's going to strike and you don't know who he is. If we don't get control of this party, then forget it. It doesn't matter if you have a Democrat or a Republican president. It's the same damn people. The Fed and the bankers and the multinational corporations and the war machine control them all. They donate equally to both parties because they don't give a shit. Whoever gets in there, you know, Obama is just his own socialist Marxist version and an extension of George Bush's, you know, wars and spying. It's all the same crap. And it just floors me that people spend all frickin' day, you know, oohing and on about Obama. I don't even think about Obama. I would never think about him except people post shit on my Facebook group. And so I end up having to see it. Otherwise, I would never even think about him. My concern is one thing. Clean this damn party up, the Republican Party. Or kiss it goodbye, because if you don't have a knight in shining armor that's willing to fight for you, virtuous, that term, you know, that concept when we ooh and ah about the Reagan administration, that is never going to happen with these people in power. Mm-hmm. And if we win back the Senate and hold the House, nothing will change if it's the same leadership in power. I don't understand how people think that it will.
No, but I mean, the thing is that there's a good chance the Republicans will gain the Senate, but if McConnell is your majority leader, come on. He's just Harry Reid from the East. That's all that it is. They even look the same. They got that turtle, mousy-looking, you know. I mean, come on, people.
They stay in there long enough, they start morphing.
Yeah, because they're all like, you know, like Gollum from, you know, the My President, my Senate, you know. And the crazy thing is, you're not going to get a third party. This is not 1854. The GOP is not going to become the Whig Party and the new party is going to rise up with the current system. They're locked in. Now, the GOP might be losing ground and might be losing membership, but it'll still be the alternate party, even though it won't mean anything. You have to take it over. Now, is that the way it should be? No. Is that what we want? No. It is what it is. Don't whine and bitch about it like, oh, you know, I'm a victim of this bad duopoly system and it's not fair. Fair my ass. You're not getting shot at when you go to the polls. You're not getting shot at when you call your representative. So what you have to do is do the heavy lifting. Take over this party. We just did it in the 7th District in Virginia. Okay, Liberty delegates have been doing it all over the place, in Alaska, in Maine, okay, in Iowa. This can happen, but not if you leave them out to dry and not if your interest ebbs and flows like American Idol or television seasons or sports seasons. It doesn't work if you're thinking with your feelings and if you're falling for rhetoric. And we've only got 30 minutes of live air left. I'm going to play a real quick clip. It's about 7 minutes. This is a perfect example of the kind of crap you get when you permit the appeal to your special feelings trump your ability to think clearly. Call in number 646-649-1013.
I want you guys to go out there and protect your balls at any cost.
Republicans, I think, to our credit, you know, have sort of morphed away from the Goldwater idea that really, you know, government just needs to be smaller. It needs to do less. It needs to, you know, it needs to be doing, you know, doing nothing except what its core functions are, to a party by and large. Not, and there are elements still, by the way, left in the party like that, to a party that by and large says, look, you know, that you know, we need to restructure the way we do programs or the way government functions to actually create the kind of incentives or create the kind of help and programs that give that authority to give that power to solve these problems to folks closer to people or to the family or to the individual themselves.
Hi, I'm Dr. Zillman, and I'd like to talk to you about your testes. The human testicle is not unlike a balloon. Sometimes it is empty. And sometimes it is full. And sometimes it can explode.
I am not a libertarian, and I fight very strongly against libertarian influence within the Republican Party and the conservative movement. I don't think the libertarians have it right when it comes to what the Constitution's all about. I don't think they have it right as to how what our history is. And we are not a group of people that believes in no government. I've got some real concerns about this movement within the Republican Party and the Tea Party movement to sort of refashion conservatism. And I will vocally and publicly oppose it and do my best to correct the record.
You fucking sneaky bastard. I'm gonna take your dwarf. I'm gonna nail it to the wall. I'm gonna crush your boils in a meat grinder. I'm gonna cut off your arms. I'm gonna shove them up your eyes. Dirty summon up at my own club.
I will be here. That running against the administration, running against the failure of Obamacare and the bad economy, that only should be step one. We do need, and I know Newt will back me up because he was a firm believer in this, and that's why 1994, we need a positive agenda. Mm-hmm. And there's been an area that we have failed. Okay. It's not painting that positive picture.
So a positive agenda. Rand Paul, who now seems to be everywhere, he's the front runner in your party. Do you agree with his ideas? You're going to support Rand Paul?
Well, look, as I said before, there's diversity in the Republican Party.
I mean, speaking of diversity, but now you got Rand Paul. He's your front runner. There he is with Rupert Murdoch there at the Kentucky Derby. Is this the new face of the Republican Party? Is this your leader?
Well, no, he's not my leader. I can tell you that for sure. But father and I had some disagreements during the last campaign.
If a libertarian like him becomes the leader of the Republican Party, gets the nomination, will you vote for him?
First off, I don't think that will happen because the Republican Party is not a libertarian party. It is a conservative party, and it will nominate a conservative, not a libertarian.
Rick, you've been doing some good things. You've been talking about blue-collar workers.
Yes, sir, I have.
And that's good. And my understanding is that you now support, or maybe you always have supported, increasing the minimum wage.
Yeah, I voted for minimum wage increases when I was in the House of Representatives, and as I did when I was in the Senate. I believe a dollar increase in minimum wage would make sense, but that's not what the president's doing. The president is trying to push forth a living wage, try to dramatically jack up the minimum wage to a point where it would dramatically impact the cost of labor and put people out of work. We need a more modest increase.
Now I'm really angry. This is fucking war.
I think that the heart of my philosophy is much more libertarianism than that's the fashionable word these days, I guess. A conservative is no longer just that. He's a libertarian.
Well, always has been. Because how do we call a liberal? You know, someone very profoundly once said, many years ago, that if fascism ever comes to America, it'll come in the name of liberalism. And what is fascism? Fascism is private ownership, private enterprise, but total government control and regulation. Well, isn't this the liberal philosophy? The conservative, so-called, is the one that says, less government, get off my back, get out of my pocket, and let me have more control of my own destiny.
Do we have a constitution, and will we defend it? In his farewell speech in 1989, Reagan said, as government expands, liberty contracts. He was right. Government cannot give us our liberty. Our rights come from our Creator. But as government grows, liberty becomes marginalized. The collective takes precedent over the individual. Freedom shrinks. And our government today is larger than it has ever been in our history. Everything that America has been, everything we ever wished to be, is now threatened by the notion that you can have something for nothing, that you can have your cake and eat it too, that you can spend $1 trillion.
20 Republicans supported reducing and eliminating foreign aid. I think the last amendment we tried was reducing foreign aid. But that's why when you vote for conservative, you need to be careful it's not a big government conservative like Santorum, who's been a big promoter of foreign aid.
I'm getting the idea that you think Santorum is now representing a threat.
Well, you know, you're starting to see that some of the conservatives have gone here and there, and they're starting to, they're looking for someone who they think is their champion. But before they settle on somebody like Santorum, they need to realize that he was a big supporter of Medicare Part D, the expansion of Medicare, big supporter of No Child Left Behind. I've seen him ask directly about the Department of Education. He's for it, whereas a lot of us who were big supporters of Ronald Reagan, my dad was one of the original supporters of Ronald Reagan, we still believe in eliminating the Department of Education, that there is no function at the federal level for that. But Rick Santorum's a big promoter of the Department of Education. He, in fact, voted to double the size of the Department of Education with No Child Left Behind. So I'd call him a big government moderate, and so conservatives need to be very wary before thinking Santorum might be their champion.
That extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice,
I think,
is
to
no
our
worse.
Credit, you know, have sort of morphed away from the Goldwater idea that really, you know, government just needs to be smaller, it needs to do less, it needs to, you know, it needs to be doing doing nothing except what its core functions are.
Shut your pie hole. We're working here.
I don't like to give Rick Santorum too much airtime because he annoys me. I also don't really want to pick on him, but he's just a prime example. And believe it or not, he's thinking about running again. He's got no shot, but he's a very good tool for someone like Jeb Bush to use to split the conservative vote. And Huckabee is also talking about it. Now, I know we're talking about 2016, but remember something, that this is playing out now and it has an impact on 2014, as 2014 has an impact on 2016. So if you get the, quote, conservative Catholic vote to go Santorum and the evangelical conservative vote to go with Huckabee, and Rand Paul manages to cull some of the, quote, libertarian vote because, you know, he's not quite like his dad, but he's the next best thing other than voting third party, and then you get Ted Cruz taking the, quote, Tea Party vote, guess who will win with lower turnout than any other Republican ever? That's right. It'll be Jeb Bush. You see the problem. You see what happens when you pick your favorite candidate based on who he is. Well, Rick Santorum's a family man. He has a large family. He's a good conservative Catholic Christian. You know, that's wonderful. You're not electing Dad of the Year. You're not electing Family Man of the Year. You're electing a commander-in-chief and someone who is at the pinnacle of a gigantic federal apparatus, and unless he has the interest of reining it in and putting it back in his constitutional box, why are you electing him? I don't care if he's a good guy. He has voted consistently for bigger government. He even said it in that clip. You heard him on the minimum wage issue. See, these Republicans don't want to follow the law. They don't want to follow the Constitution. They don't believe in local autonomy and in self-determination and in competition and 50 laboratories of regulation and all that kind of stuff. All they want to do is the same thing the Democrats are doing, only somehow they think that they can be more efficient and economical about it. Give me a break.
I'm sorry. Well, and they also like war. They're a whole bunch of warmongering psychopaths. It's just mind-boggling. You know, when we looked at, I don't know if people really looked at what happened in Libya. Okay, it was one thing. We had Iraq war, and then we had Afghanistan, and, you know, that was all off the initial 9/11, you know, thing. But Libya had nothing to do with that. That was because the guy wouldn't kiss the banker's ass. That's really what that was about. And that was what Cicero is about, and that's what the rest of them are about. But, you know, when you look at the Libya was supposed to be a no-fly zone, and it ended up being a bombing campaign, you know, at tens of billions of dollars of, you know, just blowing the shit out of the country. Now it's like only 3 of 50 weapons depots are secured by the current government. You know, it's a staging ground for jihad invasion in Syria and North Africa, and nobody even talks about it. And Republicans were just happy. They were fine with it. And then you look at the Ukraine. You know, we go in there and, you know, Soros and McCain and Nuland and, you know, they got all, like, you know, wonderful snapshot pictures and videos online, and Nuland talking about spending $5 billion of U.S. dollars to, you know, basically promote a revolution in a country that was struggling. And, you know, why? Because they hate Putin. You know, they hate Russia. They hated Russia forever. And the war on terror is a failure, so we need a new enemy. So we got one now. And who are the biggest mouths in Congress and the Senate for, you know, doing all kinds of crazy, insane shit, you know, to go after Russia, which is like could be the stupidest thing on the face of the earth, because they match us in nuclear weapons and almost match us militarily, but they definitely match us if you look at what's on their border. You know, because they're not spread all over the world like we are, and they're not exhausted and worn out from 12 years of wars. You know, they're fresh and new. So, I mean, and the biggest mouths, you know, about really going after Russia and really doing this and really doing that are frickin' Republicans. These sons of bitches want war, and they want more war because that's who their major donor is. You know, I mean... We spend $500 million, well, it's over $650 billion a year, you know, maintaining this military around the world. We just basically, you know, put our country in debt trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And here we are, you know, at zero growth for 5 years, $5 trillion of printed money, you know, plus all the trillions they printed and shipped off to Europe, you know, to export our inflation that's coming. You haven't seen nothing yet. If you don't understand economics, you better start learning. And they're trying to start another war. And hell, we're in our armies in 45 frickin' countries in Africa. How many people even know that? You know, Republicans are just happy as hell for this shit. That's what most of these people are. They got the same donors, you know, the same Wall Street and bankers and all the, you know, big corporations, but they really got the war machine. Is their major donors. That's who owns them. So war it is, baby. And if you don't change it, this is going to be the number one thing they go after Rand Paul for. Because he wants sanity in the world. He wants sanity in our foreign policy. He wants to quit giving money to dictators who, you know, burn our flag and buy yachts and keep them in the freaking Caribbean or in Morocco. Come on. You know, he wants sanity out there. And Michael Reagan just did an article, said Rand Paul gets my father. Reagan was not a warmonger. He had, you know, he inherited the Cold War, and he had some issues in South America, but he was extremely careful because he realized that, you know, this is serious shit. We're not toppling some third world nation like Libya, you know, where some lunatic like Gaddafi lives. We're talking about the second most powerful military in the world. I mean, come on. And these
nuclear
idiots,
power.
This is what, yeah, and people don't get it. I read shit all the time online and people talking about military. I study military. You know, that's one of my things, you know. And people are like, well, yeah, but America spends $500 billion. We spend all this money. Yeah, but if you looked at the waste, you know, and China and Russia are building equipment and getting it out the door left and right at a fraction of the cost. Number one, their economies are different than ours. So when you say $100 billion in Russia, that's like $300 billion here. So, you know, people just don't think. They just think, oh, we're the best. We won the Second World War, and that just makes us the best. And I'm thinking, the world has changed, and all these warmongering plans that our, you know, past presidents and administrations and Congress has had, were based on the fact that we had no competition out there that could, you know, give us trouble. Well, that's changed. Now you have 3-4 world powers who have some pretty ass-kicking military, and their economies are right up our butt, and they don't carry the debt load, and they've had growth for the last 5 years while we've been flatlined. So it's a wake-up call. We need sanity. We need people to go in there and challenge the status quo, because the status quo is either going to get us into World War IV, because III has already been going on, World War IV, or it's going to collapse our system, and we're going to be about number 5 or 6 on the barrel.
Why not
in
both?
In the rating we'll around the world.
The collapse and war.
Well, you know that's probably the game. But that's the assholes that are in power right now are the people who gave us this problem, both Democrats and Republicans. Replace them both. Quit letting people like Brennan starve to death out there so they can get a frickin' status quo stamped and dyed-in-the-wool frickin' rhino into power. It's just frustrating as hell.
Court, I agree. And
give me a break.
And what are people doing to defend Justin Amash? What are you doing? Are you helping
Nothing.
People in Michigan defend Justin Amash? What about Joe Miller up in Texas? You know, Alaska. I said up in Texas. Down in Texas. I was thinking about the fact that we already lost in Texas with Crony
Texas.
Cornyn. Okay, Crony Cornyn. And so, look, the primaries are happening, and you've got to be active now. Okay, this coming Tuesday we got Nebraska and West Virginia. Then on the 20th we've got Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky. What have you done today to help Matt Bevin replace Mitch McConnell? Have you made some calls? Have you sent some money? Have you gotten other people involved? Remember, you can't do this alone. They can't do it alone. It requires a force multiplier. You've got to get more people involved. You did it in 2010. They appropriated you in 2011. You got to come back in 2014 bigger than ever. The Republicans are trying to ride a 2010 Tea Party-like wave for the Rhino establishment, and they've got the money to do it. They got the mainstream partnership, and they've got Crossroads, and they got all this crap that they're doing out there, and they're yelling it out about outside groups like, you know, these outside groups like Freedom Works and Heritage Action and the Koch brothers and blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, they've got all their funding, and they are crushing. They are destroying, and there's more of us than there is of them, but we are disorganized. We're not involved. We're too busy and distracted. And I know you're – look, life is hard. There's a lot going on. You've got your kids, your business, your job, your medical bills, you know, taking care of disabled parents or disabled children. It is hard. But if you don't do this now, it's only going to get harder. How hard do you think it is to take care of a disabled child or an elderly parent in, say, Jordan or in Upper Manchuria or in Thailand? Because that's where we're heading. Oh, no, Rex, we're the most powerful economy and we've got the most powerful military. We have a 100% debt-to-GDP ratio while the Russians and the Chinese are sitting between 8 and 22%. That's not a good recipe for success. We are not who we used to be, and it's primarily because we've been taught to be victims, and we're acting like victims, and so you latch on to champions like Rick Santorum, and then what do? You get a Jeb Bush. A Jeb Bush. I mean, this is what they're working on. They're working on eliminating all of the Libertarian, Tea Party, conservative candidates in the House and the Senate. They're working on getting a Senate majority where they will shut down people like Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz. And McConnell will be the big man on campus running the Harry Reid playbook for Obama while speaking against it so that you'll rah-rah-rah cheer him as the good conservative guy from Kentucky, and then they're going to foist Jeb Bush on you. Jeb Bush, who says stuff like this.
Because I can't figure out the politics. I mean, it's pretty crazy, right? I'm not that smart, I promise you. It wasn't, it just...
That's what you want? Of course, that's what they want. That's what they want because he's a perfect tool for them. His brother was a great tool for them. Hey, he might be a nice guy. I mean, I don't know. Jeb might be a nice guy. George, nice guy. For all I know, Obama's a nice guy. I don't care. Rick Santorum might be a nice guy. It doesn't matter. You're not electing nice. You're not electing someone you feel good about. You're electing
the
somebody.
Policies suck.
who's going to follow the rules. And the rules are the U.S. Constitution. The rules are that we are the sovereign ones. We've only got about 15 minutes before the top of the hour. We're not going to roll too long into overtime, but at the top of the hour, that's 11 p.m. Eastern, if you are listening live right now, the browser will cut you off and you will not be able to listen. The only way you can continue to listen live is to call in on your handset, 646-649-1013. If you're listening on the Blog Talk Radio page or in podcast, just keep rolling. It'll go through. We're going to close out the show with a clip. I think some Rand Paul in there. And we play these clips. Remember something. The only reason this show exists is because you get it out there. And you can keep sharing the shows after we air them. They're available anytime on our Blog Talk Radio page. We don't make any money doing this. It costs us money to do this. If you want to have more of this information, if you want to share this information, if you want to make a difference, then you've got to be the marketing arm for this show. Otherwise, we got to get advertisers in order to be able to get it out there. And then instead of 2 hours of show with 45 minutes of relevant clips, hearing people in their own words, getting real information, you will get an hour and a half of show with an hour of commercials for products. That's just not the way we want to go. So you've got to keep doing the work. We thank everybody who's been sharing the show out there and helping us grow. That's the most important thing that you can do for us, and also tell us what you want to hear about. We have people like Matthew call in. We talk about what's going on at the RNC. If you have something out there that's going on in the grassroots world, some initiative you want to push that'll help people understand how to regain control of this duopoly and really get good citizen statesmen in there so we can roll this thing back. Let us know, 646-649-1013. Chris, we're 12 minutes before the top of the hour. Do you want to comment on that stuff, or do you want to roll into some other topic?
Roll into topic.
Okay, well, I just want to get this out because it's timely right now, and we talked about it last week, so I don't want to talk about it too much, but I got an updated clip. This is very important. It's all Benghazi. It is an electoral distraction. That's how they use it, okay? On the left, it's a phony scandal so that you can show how the Republican Party has been taken over by the teabagging, nutjob, pot-smoking, sodomite libertarian wing, okay? That's their meme. On the other side, it is some red meat for the rhinos to hold on to show you how conservative they are, right? John Boehner, I called a select committee. Well, dude, why'd you wait 2 years to do that? Because it wasn't politically viable, and now you've been forced to do it, so you're jumping on it and saying that you're the real hardcore conservative. Well, guess what? It sort of worked. That whole Benghazi thing was going on last week when he had his primary, and he friggin' won. All right? John Boehner is going to be back in the next Congress, and unless you get some real conservatives with actual testicular fortitude to dislodge him from being the friggin' Speaker of the House, he's going to be the Speaker of the House for the last 2 years of Obama's term. Oh, well, at least it's a Republican Speaker of the House. Bullcrap. Because John Boehner, that useless piece of orange beef jerky, crying tan little sissy, is nothing more than Obama's caddy. He caddies for Obama. And Obama plays golf while people like Putin are playing 3D chess and we get our asses handed to us because you're allowing people like Boehner to be Speaker of the House. Are you kidding? And Ohio reelected him. Why? Because of this Benghazi mess. Now, let's be clear about something. This is a real issue. Oh, it's been investigated 4 times. No, it hasn't. We haven't gotten all the information. 4 Americans died. How many Americans died in the Iran-Contra scandal? None. How many Americans died in Watergate? None. How many Americans died when Bill Clinton got a blowjob in the Oval Office? None. But how many Americans died here? 4. We should know why, and we should take measures to prevent that kind of abuse from occurring again. I always say, we have to make sure this never happens again. You can't make sure it never happens again. It's a screwed up world. But we shouldn't allow it to happen for political gain. Now, if there's no issue here, great. Investigate it. Put it to bed. But obviously something's going on. Here's 4 minutes on that.
How long have you had these droids?
About 3 or 4 seasons.
They're up for sale if you want them.
Hey, I want a droid, Sarge.
You can't have a droid, Bill.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
No, Grandpa, I do need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Of course they are. There's the gold one and there's the little white one.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Dude, you can keep saying that, but it doesn't make it any more true.
Move along.
Here comes the boy from the town.
out, and Democrats drop hints they may not cooperate at all with this. As Congress stands on the verge of making history with its first select committee in years. Welcome to the Kelly File, everyone. I'm Megyn Kelly. A key committee wrapped its work up just a couple of hours ago, and the full House stands ready to vote on a high-powered search for the truth behind how the administration handled the Benghazi terror attack and what happened in the days leading up to Benghazi. With Democrats suggesting now they may not play ball at all. We're hearing former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will likely be called to testify. She spoke to ABC News just a short time ago.
Benghazi, the new investigation. Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with the answers, and are you content with what you know what happened?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, there are a lot of reasons why, despite all of the hearings, all of the information that's been provided, some choose not to be satisfied and choose to continue to move forward. That's their choice, and I do not believe there is any reason for it to continue in this way, but they get to call the shots in the Congress.
Joining us tonight, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham and South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy. We begin with Mr. Gowdy, who has been named chairman of the Select Committee on Benghazi, and we are now hearing media reports that he has gotten death threats since that announcement has been made. Thank you for being here with us tonight, sir. Let me first get you to respond to that. I know that's a sensitive matter. I assume you're being protected, but the unfortunate nature of where this investigation has already gone.
Well, Megyn, first of all, thank you for saying that. I was a prosecutor for 16 years. This is not my first death threat. I'm always happy when it doesn't come from my wife, and this one did not. So I'm going to be fine, and it's not going to keep me from doing my job.
Good man. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton. She comes out tonight and suggests that people like you, I assume, are choosing not to be satisfied, that that's your choice, and the rest of us will have to live with it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you can add to that the family members of the four murdered Americans, because they still have unanswered questions. And I would just ask Secretary Clinton, with all due respect, can you explain why we were still in Benghazi after everyone else had pulled out and after the British ambassador was almost assassinated and our compound was attacked twice? There are three separate categories of questions, each with subunits within them that have not been answered. I realize it's been 20 months. But time is no barometer of thoroughness. My daughter took Latin for 3 years. She still can't speak it. So time does not mean something is thorough. When we get through with this select committee, those questions will be answered for the family members, and Ms. Clinton will have another chance to come and talk to us.
I know that you have said you intend to subpoena her, that you want her to appear before your committee. However, and I say this respectfully, the last time she appeared before Congress, what we had was a series of speeches from the lawmakers without that many probing questions. And I hear that from my viewers often when we look back on those hearings. What would be different this time?
Well, what will be different is I'm not necessarily committing to a hearing. I'm committing to getting the answers, and it may be in the form of a deposition, which, as you know, Megyn is a very good attorney, which you once were. That is the route that is most conducive with eliciting the truth. It's not 5 minutes of pounding your chest in a committee room. It's a deposition.
Can she get out of that?
Well, if she can get out of a subpoena, she can get out of it. But I don't send invitations to cocktail parties. We're going to send subpoenas, and we're going to expect her to comply. And if you don't comply, she'll suffer the same panoply consequences that any of your viewers who don't comply with a subpoena will mm-hmm. suffer.
Nancy Pelosi has come out and called for a real and equal voice for Democrats on the Select Committee, although she's still hedging her bets on whether they're going to participate at all. They may choose to just make it look like a Republican witch hunt and not participate. The inside bettors in Washington are saying they're going to participate. Right now it would be 7 Republicans, 5 Democrats. She says they want equal subpoena power. They want an equal voice. They want it to be 50-50. Will you grant that?
No, ma'am. As the president famously likes to say, elections have consequences, and the consequences of the last U.S. House race is that we are in the majority. And I hasten to add, when she was in the majority and she had a chance to constitute a select committee, she certainly did not constitute it equally, nor are any of the Senate committees equally constituted. So I'm sure if I were in the minority, I'd be asking for what she's asking for, too. She's not going to get it. I hope that she will put 5 members of her committee, of her conference on the committee. There are some very bright minds on the other side of the aisle, And our goal is to get at the truth, and they could help us do that, and I hope that they'll come.
Trey Gowdy, thank you for being here, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Another link.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Bring the noise. That's how it's done. That's how Congress holds the executive accountable. We're about 3 minutes from the top of the hour. If you are listening live, you will be cut off in your browser. The only way you can listen is to call in 646-649-1013. We're probably going to roll for about another 10, 15 minutes, and then I got about a 15-minute clip of some vital information that you should be aware of and make sure that you support candidates and get things going on out there. Chris, did you want to comment on that? Because I thought Trey Gowdy just spelled everything out very clearly, and if four Americans are killed because of negligence or because of a political cover-up, or worse, what if the CIA, the consulate in Benghazi was actually a CIA annex that was running guns illegally through Turkey to fund al-Qaeda in Syria because we were trying to topple Assad? Don't we want to know these things? Now, covert operations are important, and as the public, we can't know about the covert operations because then the enemy knows about them, but someone in Congress needs to know. And covert operations that are within the Constitution, that Congress oversees, are necessary in this world of ours. But illegal operations with no congressional oversight to fund our enemies and destabilize regions of the world, that's not acceptable.
Well, and that's the norm in this country today. I mean, the research I've done in the last 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 months, it's just the more research I do, the more disgusted I am. You know, and it isn't just about Syria funding, you know, now we're giving them advanced weaponry. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on in this country right now, and more unbelievable how few people even give a crap. But, you know, it's all about North Africa, too. I mean, they've only got control of 3 of 50 weapons depots in Libya, and used to be a stable country. You may not like the dictator there, but, you know, they had health care and, you know, they got loans to help them get new homes when they got married, and they had high education, and, you know, all of a sudden we hated, you know, we loved him, then we hated him, then we loved him, then we blew him up. And now we got, you know, the basically the staging ground for all terrorist activity from Syria to North Africa to Central Africa. That's kind of criminal, in my opinion. So it'd be kind of nice to find out if there's, you know, what the truth is behind all that. That's not a covert operation. That's, maybe this is too strong of a word. That's kind of treasonous, if you ask me. We lost a lot of men to the terrorists in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it'd be a shame if we were funding them and arming them. It's a shame we are, in my opinion, but that's my opinion. So I just hope that, you know, I like Gowdy, and somebody actually asked me, what do you think of this whole thing? And I said, well, he's being played, but I believe he's sincere. You know, nobody, the Republicans or the Democrats, are going to want the real truth out, and the real truth is about the weapons. But that's never going to come out. It's always going to be about the four deaths, which are tragic and they're terrible, and I watched all the hearings and the whistleblowers and everything going into that, and it was just disgusting. But I've been disgusted for 12 years, two presidencies, or what is that? We're going on whatever, 12 years. Good enough. But so here we are, and thank God it's moving forward. Unfortunately, I think you were absolutely correct that the only reason Boehner did it is so he could get reelected, because he could say, look what I just did, even though he blocked the select committee for 20 months. It never ends, you know, every facet of everything that's going on. And I don't know if it's going to take an economic crash. I don't know if it's going to take a huge war. I don't know what it's going to take to wake people up, but people need to wake up, and they need to, you know, get off of the news of the day and learn how to research on the internet and find good sources and get in some good groups where people use critical thinking and start supporting people who will be like Trey Gowdy or Mike Lee or Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or, you know, the rest of them, the guys that are fighting for constitutional sanity in our country, because we're so far from the Constitution and we're so far from fiscal sanity you know, decades and decades and decades away from center, even center line. It'd be nice just to get back to center. So that's my input on that on that video or clip. Sorry.
No, I agree. I agree with those points. And yeah, this, there is no question that this is a it's meat for the media. And it is actually meat for both parties. It's red meat for the conservative base that thinks that Obama is the Antichrist and wants to pin something on him or to derail the second Antichrist, Hillary Clinton, from running in 2016. It's red meat for the liberals because it gives them another tool to beat up the racist libertarian teabagger wing that's taken over the Republican Party with their phony scandals and making stuff up simply because Obama's black and they don't like Hillary Clinton because she's a woman because the Republicans have launched a war on women. So it's great for the media, both the MSLSD type and the Fox Noise kind, and it's great for both parties because it's that kind of issue that gets you all hopped up emotionally one way or the other and you stop thinking and looking at things seriously. Well, in the midst of all that, you've got a very capable, intelligent man, a successful prosecutor, a man who thinks through things, Trey Gowdy, who would be a great Speaker of the House, but friggin' Ohio reelected Johnny Boehner. We'll see what happens next year. But so the reason they didn't want a select committee and why they're hyping up the story now is because they're trying to crowd it out. The reason they didn't want a select committee is because this can be a problem. Because Trey Gowdy can subpoena people. He can. He said he might depose then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. This is very dangerous to the political establishment because these are the kind of actual tools that the Founding Fathers put into the Constitution in order to hold one branch accountable to another branch. And instead of turning it into some WWE-type fake brawl, there could be something here. Now, if there's nothing here, Trey Gowdy will find out and put it to bed. If there's something here, we need to get to the bottom of it and find out what deficiencies we have in our structure that is permitting money and power to go willy-nilly wherever it wants to go for the men in power, contra the Constitution, contra the people, contra the interests of the United States. This is not a small issue, but you have to look at it critically because it is a real issue. There is some real things that have to be found out, but it is also a hyped-up media issue designed to prey on your emotions, and it doesn't matter where you fall in the spectrum. They're playing you. It's a Hegelian dialectic. They're messing with your head. And in the meantime, they're distracting you from Rule 10H. They're distracting you from a truncated primary season. They're distracting you from not reelecting friggin' Johnny Boehner. McConnell's up in 2 weeks. They're going to come up with some big story to distract you then so that Matt Bevin doesn't even get heard of. They want to destroy Justin Amash. They want to take out Joe Miller. They want to reelect Bob Corker. This is what's going on, and don't think for a friggin' second that Fox News is your friend. It's a lying, lying machine. They stick enough truth in there. They give you enough facts. They put enough good people on, like they interview Ted and they interview Rand and they have Judge Napolitano on there, and then they give you an hour with Mike Huckabee, and they have Ricky Santorum on, and then they got all those big boob blondes to distract you. Don't fall for it. It's all crap. Think for yourself. Get to the meat. Find out where the real issues are, where the real races are, and get busy supporting those people who are going to help us roll back this monstrosity. And don't forget about your local level, because your sheriff is going to be very important. Is he a constitutional sheriff? Do you know who he is? You know, if you're going to get any kind of, militia committee put together to revitalize the militia, you need to know who your delegates are in your state, who your state senators are. There is going to be a pressure that has to come from the state level and the local level. But the national level right now has all the money, all the power, all the guns, and all the media. And so you got to take that apart from inside. Going third party might work at your local level, but at the national level, not a chance in hell. They've locked it up. Chris, you want to do anything else, or you want to go to final thoughts?
Final thoughts. I mean, that's kind of doing something else, right? you made some good points, and the Hillary, you know, running Hillary. And I just saw another poll in another area where Rand was beating Hillary again. So, you know, they've got to destroy Rand. Keep that in mind. moving forward. We don't know everybody that's going to run, but obviously, you know, even though Rand obviously says he's thinking about it, he's making the moves. So, you know, for Bush to win, and he's such a low approval rating, and they will destroy him. You know, they will just replay the whole Bush era all over again. They just pull out all the past campaign voices and run against Bush again. Oh, my God. But he will, you know, the only way he will win is if the establishment manipulates it. You know, run Santorum, run Huckabee, you know, run a few people who have got half the Christians in this country confused about. I don't want to go too deep into that one. But so, you know, he'll be like Romney. He'll win with nothing, you know. And then he'll get in there and lose to one of the worst people ever in our government. You know, that's just what's coming down the road if people don't wake up. And it was really the 2014 midterm is extremely important, because when you look at what goes on during a national election, everybody's at play. You know, your local, your state, your senators, your congressmen and women. Everybody's at play, and all those people, who those people are and who they endorse and who they back and who they speak with, all that stuff makes a difference on who wins the primary. And so if you have a strong showing of sane, conservative, libertarian, you know, mindset in Congress to back somebody, you know, who cares about the Constitution, sane foreign policy and fiscal responsibility, then they're going to get a lot more play. But if they go in there, it's like Goldwater. Goldwater won with massive grassroots support, and then he lost the election because the RINOs, or the Rockefeller Republicans, just walked away. There was so many of them in power. And so that whole money machine, you know, that campaigning, all the things that you do to help somebody win, they just walked away and left him out there with nothing. And so he lost the election. Now, Reagan was another dynamic. So the country was freaking the hell out. I was a teenager in that era. I wasn't. I was a young adult. But I was a teenager in the Carter era. I remember the gas lines and having to put on a wool sweater because my dad had dropped the temperature in the house, you know, in the house, and everybody had to freeze together, you know, to save money. Because of, bad administration and bad policy. But Reagan won everything. He won everything but one state. And it was such a monstrous movement. But I also realized that we're a much more divided nation on so many different factors, and we have the attention span of a gnat, you know, so we're easily distracted by things. And the media is, you know, in the 80s, there was 50, you know, owners of major media around the country. Now there's 6, you know, and 5 of them are totally liberal, and the 6th one is a bullshitter. You know, like you said, he plays just enough conservative stuff and puts enough conservatives on there to make you think that they're telling you the truth the rest of the time. Not, they're not, and, you know, they are total establishment. You know, they helped Romney win. They, you know, would put Newt on there or Dr. Paul, and then they'd have their panel and just rip them apart when they couldn't defend themselves after they left, you know, after the little interview. I mean, it was so obvious, I just had to shut it off. I couldn't watch it. So what we're coming into is the importance of, it really boils back to what I said at the beginning. You've got to know who you are, what you believe in, what you want, what you're willing to do. And then you got to do something, you know, and not everybody's, you know, geared up for doing a radio show. Well, that's fine. Bring them here. You know, not everybody, you know, is geared up to have a group on Facebook. That's fine. We've got a couple, you know, I mean, and there's other good ones out there. I'm not saying we're all that in a bag of chips, but we fight hard, you know, for sanity. I think our strength has always been putting the things together, looking through the smoke and haze and focusing on the important things and then getting to the truth and connecting the dots for people. That just seems to be, you know, what our forte is, so we just keep plugging along. How long we do this, that's a good question, you know. you know, every week we discuss it. So, you know, it's important. It's your life. It's your country. I just get that you know, I'm online right now doing research, looking at the polls and the returns on in eastern and southeastern Ukraine in those two states, oblasts. And, you know, I was just thinking, boy, you guys better arm up, because they've been killing, you know, unarmed citizens trying to vote, you know, by the dozens, and nothing's being done about it. And now that the vote's, like, overwhelming support for independence, you can bet your ass, you know, with the 15,000 troops and all the armored vehicles, that they're going to start killing a lot of people. So I think they better arm up, because it's going to get ugly. And to think that people are willing to bleed and die for what they believe in, and you can't get people to shut off the damn TV and go get involved in things that will make a difference on the future country, that's more than frustrating. And I don't know how to wake people up. I don't know what it'll take. I know there's a lot of people are awake. I know a lot of people are fighting hard, but they're the minority, I guarantee you, because we know a lot of them. And if you can know a lot of them or most of them, then there ain't enough, you know, and it should be much more powerful than that. To have a Reagan moment, you got to have a movement through your country. And, you know, I don't know how to think about that yet. I don't know how to, you know, say, is that possible? Will we get a Rand Paul or a Ted Cruz or, you know, somebody who gives crap about the Constitution and the rule of law? Will we get that? And will they even be able to succeed? Would a Reagan even be able to succeed in this corrupt six ownership media complex that we have today? I don't know. You know, I don't know. It's a different era. So, and people are different. I you know, people have always been distracted and short-focused, but I think people, I mean, you look at the numbers that turn out, you know, from the 60s and 70s and 80s, the 90s and 2000s on, and less and less and less people are involved, and that does matter. You know, people say, oh, elections don't matter. Yeah, they do. The only way they can cheat on an election is if it's close, and you talk about that all the time. I didn't come up with that. That's your mantra. You know, if it's overwhelming, they just can't cheat, because it'd be so blatantly obvious. You know, it's like, and so here we are, another Sunday, beautiful sunny day in Western Washington, and I pray that people wake up, because government's not going to fix itself. And if you think it is, and you think these liars who are all of a sudden they're all conservative, well, yeah, they're getting ready to get elected, you know, reelected. They got to act conservative because they want your money and your vote. And you got to quit believing these jerks and start go online and look up their damn records. And when you got a guy, you're voting for a guy who has a 65% conservative voting ratio on Heritage, he's a Democrat with an R by his name. Quit voting these assholes back in power. You know, they don't belong in this party. And you know, if they don't got a 75, 80% and above, what in the hell are you voting for them for? Find the other guy and vote for him and give him money. And if you got no choices in your state, then send some money to Amash. Amash is one of the most honest, straight-up guys there is in Congress, and he's being left out, you know, to hang and lied about on a daily basis and outspent again because they want rid of him because he's honest. And they can't have that because they can't play their oligarch, you know, corporate, you know, world homogeny war games and all the crap they're doing with guys like Amash in Congress, you know? And you get more of them in there, and they can actually get something done, and they can stop this thing. So, but you got to get the good guys back in, and you got to get the good guys who are running against the bad guys. You got to give them a chance. They need money. They need help. They need support. They need phone calls. If you live in their state, you know, then they need physical help. And this is important, folks. It's, I don't know how many times we can say this. 2014 is vital to 2016. And I have this terrible feeling that people are just going to wait until 2016 and play the political American Idol game again. And if you do that, then the RNC's already got the deck stacked, and you're going to get another Bush who will lose to Hillary Clinton. It's just that simple. You know, that's my prediction. I'm done.
Well, wiser fellow than myself once said, sometimes you eat the bar and much obliged. Sometimes the bar while he eats you.
Yeah, sometimes the bar he eats you. But if you don't fight the bar, then you lose. Coming up Tuesday, Nebraska, West Virginia. Then the following week, May 20th, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky. Get involved. Do something. And this is not just about elections, but elections do matter. And what Chris said is absolutely true. All right. They suppress the turnout. They get less and less of us involved. They make it, get the numbers so close that they can rig it one way or the other. And the lower the turnout is, the more disaffected you are, the more you feel like a victim, and the more the game goes on. And that's what it is. Who are you? What do you believe? Do you believe in liberty? Do you believe in the duties that come along with the rights that you have been given? And do you want to have the freedom to exercise them or not? You know, a victim is defined by Webster's as a person who has been attacked, injured, robbed, or killed by someone else. A person who is cheated or fooled by someone else. One that is acted on and usually adversely affected by a force or agent. One that is subjected to oppression, hardship, or mistreatment. One that is tricked or duped. If you feel like a victim, and I'm not taking anything away from people that are victimized, whether it's, it's been a disease that you've been victimized by, a robbery, a mugging, a rape, a loss of, members of your family, whatever. It happens all over the world. Americans have been fed this victim mentality when we've still got it better than 99% of the planet. Now, we don't have it better because we're doing good. We have it better because we have the vestiges of liberty coursing through our system. We have the vestiges of free enterprise that have given us so much over the last century despite the monetary manipulation. We have the vestiges of security from a restrained military that has saved the world at least twice. But now we seem to be the aggressor. Now we're the ones that are putting the rest of the world in a dangerous position while increasing danger here. Imperialism abroad, pseudo-imperialism, because we don't get any of the plunder, and a police state here. Why? Because you're whining about being a victim. And so what do? You look for a hero to fix it for you. Is it Ted Cruz, or is it Rand Paul, or is it Mike Huckabee, or is it Rick Santorum, or is it Hopi Changi Obama, or, oh, goodness, Hillary's coming back. That's so great. Stop it. And this is about more than elections, but elections matter. Do you know what the Constitution says? Do you know how it works? Do you know what the militia of the several states is? Do you know the role of your sheriff? Do you know how this country was founded? Do you understand how the Federal Reserve works? Do you know who Janet Yellen is? If you're listening, the answers are probably yes, 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 and yes. That's great. Have you gotten 30 other people involved just in the last month? Have you educated at least 30 people in the last 30 days? Have you gotten people involved so that they can help get the candidates who understand these things? Because let's be clear about something. There are, with the way the structure is right now, every piece of legislation carries winners and victims. And usually you're the victim. And if you act like a victim, you will continue to get victimized by the villains. And who are these villains? It's not just the political class. These are really the mouthpieces of villainy. They don't write the bills. They don't read the bills. And they don't even know which way they're voting on the bills until they're told to. And who tells them? The interests. And don't start pointing fingers simply at Liberty Street in Manhattan, the New York branch of the Federal Reserve, and the big corporations, because it's more than that. The government bureaucracy itself is one of the biggest pressures. All those alphabet soup agencies from CIA to BLM to NSA, they all have special interests, and they push this stuff onto Congress. The media has an interest, and most of them are out-and-out communists. So you have to be that voice of reason, but they manipulate you. I want government spending cut. Don't touch my Social Security. We need to spend less on defense. Oh, but, you know, we got to take care of our veterans, so let's throw more money into the VA. More money in the VA is not going to solve the problem. These people are getting paid $180,000 a year to have veterans die because they won't see them. There is a systemic problem. Throwing money at it will make it worse. Foreign aid that Rick Santorum supports and Rand Paul is speaking, oh, Rand Paul is going to make the world a dangerous place if we don't have foreign aid. I mean, what about Israel? What about all those hungry people in Africa? Oh, my God, there's 200 girls missing, and Boko Haram has kidnapped them. That sucks, okay? But when was the last time you even heard about all the sex trafficking going on here? We cannot save the world, much as we might want to. But how about we clean up our own house? Children are victimized here, but it's not a popular media story. Unless they happen to be really cute, then we'll put them all over the Amber Alerts. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that kind of stuff, but I'm just saying that it's a game. It's not really about the kids. All right, we kill 4,000 of them every day in this country, so don't give me this crap that we care about the kids. We don't care about the kids. We've lost our way. We whine about being victims, and we want the government to be smaller and do less, except when it directly affects us. Well, it affects all of us in almost every facet of our lives. And when you act like a victim, they will treat you like a victim. And the villains will run your life, and at their benevolence, you can have some liberty. But as soon as you don't conform and you come up against that state, you got a problem. And the only thing that is going to fix it is virtue. Doing the right thing, no matter the cost. Courage is not absence of fear. It is doing what needs to be done despite the fear. And don't think you've got some kind of special Gnostic knowledge or that Chris and I have some kind of special Gnostic knowledge. We have some secret inside information about the inner workings of the NWO or the party you lead. No. That's a bunch of crap. That's a scapegoat ploy. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't go on. But don't point fingers at it and say, well, there's nothing we can do about it. It's secret. And so all I can do is just tell people about what's going on. There's more to it than that. Have the courage to do the right thing, no matter the cost. And that means talking about politics with people who are otherwise uninterested and educating them, because we need large numbers to combat the money and the entrenched power that has usurped what America is, and take responsibility, because we have willingly allowed it. We have willingly allowed it to happen. It's because we've forgotten who we are. And let's be clear about something, about who we are. We are people, and whether your ancestors came here last week legally through the front door, or they came here 300 years ago, or maybe they walked over the Asia over Alaska a million years ago. I don't know. It doesn't matter. What they all did was they got up and they left where they were because it sucked, and they came here. And they handed this to you, and we're squandering it. You can't let that happen, because then you're a victim of your own lack of virtue. And you did it to yourself, and you got nobody else to blame. You want this country back? You want the Constitution to be the supreme law of the land? You want liberty to reign? You want to live your life as you ought, without interference, and not as an individual island, because no man is an island. We live our lives together, and we order them that way. And there are duties that go along with those rights. Do we want to be those people again? Because it ain't going to happen overnight. You've lost two or three generations already. You got to do the hard work of picking it back up. The roots of liberty in this country go back thousands of years. Most recently, it came to us through Anglo-Saxon common law, starting with the Magna Carta. That's what built it. But see, like a fish in water, we forget what brought us here, and so we throw it off because it's outmoded and it's old and it's useless. And then we get chaos, and then we scream like, you know, victims. The villains are coming after us. Villains are always coming after us. It's always been the case. Man has been victimizing man since Cain killed Abel. Suck it up. Put on your big girl panties, your big boy panties, and suck it up, because that's the world. You want to be free? You take the duties that come along with it. Otherwise, the villains win, the victims cry, and it's all because of lack of virtue. But if you do your part, not for any selfish reason, not for self-aggrandizement, not for money, not for property, but you do it because it's right, because you were made to be free, you were made to live, worship, work the way that you ought, without coercion, not as a child, but as a sovereign human being, then stand up and do it. And when they look back, years from now, they will say, this is when it turned around. This is when America became America again. This is when America became a good moral actor in the world, because the people of America restrained the runaway bankers, lawyers, and warmongers that you have allowed to ruin this country. Now's the chance. 2014 matters. It has already started. We are running behind. We're losing races because we are weak. But as they did in District 7 here in Virginia, we can roll it back. But we can't do it alone. We have to do it together. Tell somebody about it. Get somebody involved every day. Make it happen. We'll be back next Sunday at 9 for more Liberty's Thunder. In the meantime, make sure conservatives and libertarians are elected, reelected, and the rhinos are defeated. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. Killed men by the hundreds. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Right? Against that? No! We will run!
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your bed, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the day from this day to that? For one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
I came in earlier today. Somebody asked me if I knew Jesus. I said, well, yes, I do. And I know his mother as well. Right next door to the house that I lived in a number of years ago, there was a huge tree that shot up well above the third story of the house. And I noticed a curious thing. I'm not well acquainted with trees. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I saw one once, as I remember. It may have died by now, but this is a tree in Michigan where I live, and I looked up at the top of this tree, and I saw that part of it was blooming and part of it was dead. So a friend suggested that I call a tree doctor. Who knew from tree doctors? And he came and he examined the bark, he examined the roots, he examined some of the dead leaves, and he came up on the porch and he said, I'm sorry, Father, the tree is dead. You have to take it down. I said, how can the tree be dead? Half of it's blooming. He said, it's an illusion. The sap is still running through the tree, but the roots are dead. In effect, the tree is living off of its past life. And I think sometimes about America when I think about that. But I don't believe that our roots need die. I believe that they can be revivified. I think we can save America, and if we save America, we will do so by tending to the roots. And what is the root of the American concept? It's a very ancient root. It was not invented by Americans. It was discovered by Americans. That root goes back to biblical times. It understands that the dignity of the human person is part and parcel of who the human person is. That human beings, the concept of who human beings are, is that we are unrepeatable, that we possess a dignity that comes from outside of the human circumstance, outside of society, that our rights inhere not by virtue of society, but are merely recognized by just societies. The dignity of the human person, this Judeo-Christian understanding of anthropology, is at the root of this freest, most prosperous, most progressive, most liberal, in the right understanding of that word, experiment in human society that the world has ever seen. C.S. Lewis expresses this Judeo-Christian anthropology beautifully in one of his essays when he said that you have never met a mere mortal. Everyone with whom you have ever come in contact, everyone you have ever loved or hated, every shop girl from whom you have ever purchased anything, is either an immortal splendor or an everlasting horror. But you have never met a mere mortal. And then Lewis went on to say that the most sacred thing that presents itself to our senses next to our neighbor, the most sacred thing is our neighbor. The American experiment formed a set of institutions that recognize this dignity of the human person. And the Judeo-Christian understanding of this anthropology is what enabled us to build the institutions of private property, contract, law, the university, the hospital, institutions of charity and international charity that served people not because they were believers, but because we are believers. And all of this is threatened. All of this is being threatened by an anti-anthropology because it fails to understand that we are immortal splendors, that treats people just as though they were material objects without a destiny beyond this world. If freedom is lost on our watch, if the end of freedom comes about in our epoch, it will be because we have forgotten what the end of freedom really is. The true telos of freedom is not to be found in an empty vacuum. The orientation of freedom is the truth. The truth of who we are in our immortal dignity, made in the image and likeness of God. Each of us unrepeatable from the moment of our conception until our natural death. Each of us possessing a destiny beyond this world. And so to those who advocate a kind of class warfare and class conflict, we say with Mother Teresa, we do not believe in class conflict or warfare. We believe rather in class encounter, where the rich save the poor and the poor save the rich. Thank you very much.
Offers us an amazing future. In the past 100 years, we've gone from nearly 50% mortality in childhood to less than 1%. The average life expectancy of the turn of the last century is 43. I'm not against science. I'm a physician. I'm for it. But my hope, though, is that we don't lose our appreciation of the miracle that springs forth from tiny strands of DNA. Einstein said there are two ways to look at life, to look at the world. We can either look at life as if there are no miracles, or we can look at life and see miracles everywhere. I choose the latter. As a physician, I've sometimes witnessed the tragedy of disease, the face of suffering, but I've also seen the miracle of life coming into the world. As you make your way into adulthood, you can choose to see the miracle, or you can succumb to that soothing voice that intones, everything is okay, everything's just fine, all is well, until all isn't well. America is sick. There is a sickness among us. And it's not just growing pains. There's something fundamentally sick about our country. And it's not just President Obama's fault either. Okay, well, a lot of it is. But seriously, the problem is bigger than partisan politics. I believe that America is in a full-blown spiritual crisis. The problem, as Oz Guinness puts it, is not wolves at the door, but termites in the floor. Our foundation cracks. It's not that we've chosen the wrong politician, although we may have chosen a few of the wrong ones. It's more fundamental, though, than that. I think we've arrived, though, at a day of reckoning. Will we falter, or will we thrive and refind our mojo? America has much greatness left in her. If we believe in ourselves, believe in our founding documents, believe that our rights come from our Creator, believe in an economic system that has made us the richest and the most humanitarian nation ever. But we must realize that freedom needs virtue. As Oz Guinness writes, the only proper restraint to freedom is self-restraint. What does that mean? It means that those of us who love freedom must realize that freedom is not license to do as you please. Freedom could only be realized when citizens know self-restraint, or put another way, virtue. This parallels Washington's belief that democracy requires a virtuous people. Laws don't really restrain people. 98% of people follow a virtuous course with or without law. Now, this isn't an argument against laws, but an argument that laws alone are not enough to civilize a nation. What America needs is not another politician. What America needs is a revival. What we need to discover is that the law follows virtue. When virtue is restored, then will the law reflect goodness? Ray Bradbury wrote, "Everybody must leave behind something when he dies, something your hand touched. So when people look at that tree or flower you planted, you're there. It doesn't matter what you do," he said, "so long as you change something from the way it was before you touched it into something that's like you after you take your hands away." Michelangelo put it another way. He said, "I saw the angel in the marble, and I carved to set him free." I like that. I think all of us have an inner angel, an inner voice that if we pay attention to it, will set us free. As each of you makes your way in life, don't leave any page unturned. Free the angel from the stone. Strike a course full of joy and hope, and do it with a smile. Embrace each day like the hymn proclaims, then sings my soul. Good luck. We're counting on you. God bless you.
Rise up, you've got to rise. up and rise. Rise up, you've got to rise. Rise up, you wake up and rise. Wake up and rise. Come on, so let them say.